Thank you. Okay, welcome everybody here. I call this regular meeting of the Community Services District of Cambria to order. I do see that we have all five directors present, so we do have a quorum. In addition, staff present are our board secretary, Leah Riedel. We've got General Manager Weigold. We have Melissa Bland, Program Manager, Carlos Mendoza, our Facilities and Resource Manager, Denise Fritz, our new Finance Manager. Welcome, Denise. And let's see, who else have I called out here? Oh, Fire Captain Ryan Maloney, we're going to do a swearing in a short while. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And out there in the audience, presently, we have nine, which is a nice number. I'll go ahead and read that list out when we get to public comment, so everybody that's listening will at least know who else is out there with them. So commencing then, I think we are ready. I kind of jumped the order here, I see. Let's do the Pledge of Allegiance, if you'd be so good as to join me. Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everybody. All right, I see here that, let's see, yes. Mr. Carmel, do we have a report from closed session today? Not hearing you.
How's that?
Perfect.
Sorry about that. At the June 23rd special meeting, the board had a closed session to consider the general manager's performance, but there's nothing to report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. And now let's see, we are ready for the president's report. I don't have a lot to tell you at the moment, although there is some good information that needs to come out. I would like to put a shout out to our excellent water crew for the work they did this Sunday afternoon to fix a water main leak. I believe it was a main line at the on Windsor Boulevard over there in the Park Hill area. So kudos to them for sacrificing their Sunday afternoon to help us out here. So as always, I don't know, it seems to me like sometimes these breaks purposely occur on the weekends. I think there's some kind of a, I think somebody, Edgar Allan Poe wrote a story about the imp of the perverse. You kind of wonder. Anyway, but we do have some other information, and for this, I'd like to turn it over to GM Weigold. We have some staffing, interesting and important information to give you all regarding our staffing. So, Mr. Weigold, floor is yours.
Thank you, President Howell. And one other event occurred on the weekend in utilities, and that was the power outage affected the wastewater treatment plant. And after some initial issues with the generator starting up, and remember that generator is somewhere 35 to 40 years old, that was up and running, and our plant was fully operable. And so a number of on-call wastewater folks were involved on that again on the weekend. So on the staff front, three significant items to address. First, welcoming to her very first board meeting is Denise Fritz, who is coming on board and joining us as our new finance manager. And as you can see, our current administrative department head manager, Pam Duffield, all smiles from that happening. Second item is I want to report to the board with there's going to be some further follow-up required on this with board action, but Melissa Bland will be assuming a reconstituted role of assistant general manager. She's on here on the call today. And then lastly, as you know, our former chief, William Hollingsworth, retired last month, and we have been hard at work ever since we were acknowledged or knowledgeable of his retirement to find a replacement. So we've narrowed the field down to three finalists, and they will be coming to be part of a second round of interviews with between two different panels. And that'll happen over the next several weeks. And we hope to have a finalist here identified here in the next month or so. And with that, President Howell, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Weigold. So welcome, Ms. Spritz. Welcome to joining the crew here. We look forward to working with you. And of course, many thanks to Ms. Duffield for her long and faithful service as we move forward here. And thanks to Ms. Duffield for hanging out to help us out through this year and the transition. The next item would be, do we have any, this is agenda review, additions or deletions, moving items around? Do we add anything from the board here? It's more deletions or moving things around. Okay, seeing none, we'll come to our awards and acknowledgments. And today we have Captain Ryan Maloney, who will be swearing in our new SAFER firefighter, Mr. Will Stewart. So, Captain Maloney, the floor is yours.
I'd like to thank the board and president for having me here today. Today, we're basically going to be swearing in one of our newest personnel who's covering in the SAFER grant position, SAFER firefighter. And I'd like to introduce the board to Will. Why don't you come on forward? This is Will Stewart. He came to the Cambria Fire Department in 2022 as a reserve firefighter. He was promoted to a SAFER firefighter position and medic in June of 2022. Will comes to Cambria with 5 years of experience with the Columbia Fire Protection District. He also has experience in being an ER tech in ER in Sonoma Regional Medical Center and French Hospital. He also comes to us with 5 years of paramedic full-time experience with San Luis Ambulance. He is currently still working there as a part-timer, so he's still getting a lot of calls and a lot of refreshing stuff. In Will's off time, he enjoys hiking through the county, rock climbing. He has his girlfriend Madison here today who's gonna pin him. And he also enjoys kayak fishing through the coastal waters, both freshwater and saltwater. His girlfriend tells me that one of these days his big ambitions is to change in that kayak for a boat. So I'd like to have Madison come on up here. Madison, this is his fire badge. Can you please put on his uniform for him? Now for the official part of the oath. I state your name, do solemnly swear.
I, William Stewart, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
I will bear true faith and my allegiance.
I will bear true faith and my allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
I take this obligation freely.
I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will and faithfully discharge.
And that I will and faithfully discharge.
The duties upon which I am about to enter.
The duties upon which I am about to enter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to thank the board and the president for your time, and I'll let you guys get back to your meeting. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Captain Maloney. And it always moves me to hear that oath. It's amazing how much power those words have.
Yes, it is. And it's something that just about every firefighter across the nation takes in, and every firefighter needs to take his heart, and they actually have to think about those words before they pronounce them.
Absolutely.
A very big obligation.
Yes, it is. I really appreciate you and your work. And but by the way, that same oath is the one that we all have to take. That's why it's kind of ingrained almost in the cells now. So thank you so much, and welcome to Mr. Stewart. We're looking forward to. I'm just wondering if he has any. You know, how does he have time to do all that stuff?
He's a very busy man.
Okay.
He's a very busy man.
I like all that energy. So thank you again. And so moving on, we are now ready for board member communications. So this is communications either from you to the public or from you to your fellow board members or from you to staff. Do we have any communications? I'll give you just a minute to think it over. Okay, seeing none, we'll move onward. Okay, this is the Prost Commission report. I don't see Mr. Niffen today. Director Farmer, are you able to give that report, or should we just skip over that? Yes, Jim Weigel, go ahead.
Yes, President Howell, I'd ask that Leah bring in Steve Niffen from the attendee side of the House.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Jim Weigel. So, yes, Leah, if you would be so kind. I see him now out there. I missed his name. Okay. Steve, I see your tile here. Where did it go? There he is.
I thought I was going to miss out.
No such luck.
Great. All right. So I'll keep it short. Skate park update. Currently, the number is $501,000 minus the $178,000 that the CCSD gave them. So they're around $325,000. They made $63,000 on the brick campaign. They're going to participate in the Pine Dorado parade. They have big ideas for all the kids getting together on that, with the grammar school and the high school trying to combine all the kids in town in one group to make a statement so that we can all see that there are a number of children in town. That's something big coming up with those guys. They're probably also going to do something during the Scarecrow Festival in the month of October. So they are still working diligently on getting to that number to be ready for us when we get our end of that taken care of. Other than that, they're still working on the bathrooms. We have been told through staff that you guys are looking for us to put together a list of things to do on the East Ranch once the bathrooms have been accomplished. Is that a true statement?
I think that, board members, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Mr. Niffen is right. I think the understanding is correct.
So, and we're all for that. We have, go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah, Drick.
It wasn't a list of things. It was a matter of, the way it was phrased, if I remember correctly, is that to take a look at the list that had previously been generated, because there was a lot of, granted it's old, but there was a lot of information there in terms of feedback about things that could be considered for that site. And that we had asked to have the PROS committee come back with three recommendations of things that might be pursued. So it isn't a matter of having to come up with a whole list. It isn't a matter of having to start from scratch. It's a matter of using some resource material that's already there for your review and look, and then to come back with three recommendations.
I think we're really comfortable with that. We were thinking that we might need to open it up to the public again. Are we opposed to that? Sure. Just kind of saying, hey, we're finally going to move forward with some things. Maybe here are some of the old ideas we had. And
it's an excellent conversation. Personally, I think that's an excellent conversation.
Yeah, we just, it's been a long time since the lists were made and talked about. So, and unless there was some really pressing time frame to that issue, we think that we kind of want to spend a little time on it and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jim Weigel, your hand is up.
Yes, President Howell. Also, the board in its deliberations to update the strategic plan has a new goal to manage and provide stewardship of district assets, park, rec, open space in a timely, cost-effective, and environmentally sensitive manner. And under that goal, number three is to present to the board for review and consideration the PROS Commission's recommended options for East Ranch Recreation Expansion. So the board will consider that next Thursday at its regular board meeting.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Director Seidel.
Just for clarification, it isn't so much that we would be expecting that information back from PROS by next Thursday.
Yeah, I don't.
Correct. That isn't what you were intimating. It was that as a strategic plan item would be looked at.
That's okay. Correct.
Didn't want to send a message to Mr. Niffen that you got to fall on your sword by next Thursday.
Yeah.
You
know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you both. Yeah, Director Steindl. I was wondering about that. So yeah, I think the intent here is next week we'll kind of flesh that goal out and maybe discuss it some more and maybe provide additional guidance. But I think to Mr. Niffen's question, I personally have no problem with the PROS Commission involving the public and as they go forward. Does anyone else have an objection to that or would like to offer additional guidance?
So let's say this is a community. We're having an open conversation right now. If you've got something, you got an idea. I know the Garmin's passed along some stuff a couple of months ago, but let's flush it out and see what we're going to do down there.
Yeah, excellent. This is good news. And I do have to take public comment on this item. So at some point, maybe we'll hear something today as well. Director Steindl.
I'm just curious as to whether it's worthwhile providing some kind of context for folks when they're hearing about ideas and recommendations. Because, I mean, obviously, the idea of spending a couple of million dollars to do something immediately is not practical, but some small project that could be executed quickly maybe. And I don't know if that can be phrased in some kind of context, just so that people aren't going to be disappointed if they make recommendations about things that just aren't fiscally feasible.
That's an important concern. I would hope that what would happen is as the PROS Commission accepts all this input, that they massage it and kind of, and perhaps Mr. Niffen, in your interactions with the public, I think all ideas are probably great to have. And there might be some million-dollar ideas, and we don't want to just push them aside, but at the same time, what Director Steindl said, and I think the PROS Commission is in a position in interacting with the public to kind of adjust people's expectations.
Yeah, I agree. That's our role, to tamper those expectations. There's no money and there's no water, so we're not going to have a water park there either, right?
Not right away.
You can check that one off.
But we are looking for some imaginative ideas that would be, you know, relatively feasible for us to accomplish.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's kind of exciting. I have one question for you, and then if with your report, I'll go to the public and see if they have any input to give you. I just was wondering, I've been kind of intrigued with the bike trail initiative that's going on there. And could you comment on that just a little bit?
Well, they have also found themselves in a position where they're a group of people that want to accomplish something, but they've got to have something a little bit more official before they can start making headway. But there's a lot of positive energy around that. And I just think the more and more we see bikes all over this town, we're going to be forced into doing something.
I have to agree with you on that. It looks like, and let's hope that we can kind of meet the thing before it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So at this point, if there are does the board have any further questions or observations for Mr. Niffen? I'll go to the public. Does anybody have anything else? Okay. At this point, I'll go to the public. So folks out there, this would be an opportunity. If you have anything that you'd like to say to Mr. Niffen, this would be the time. I'll give you a minute. I see Director Farmer, you've got your hand up. So just a second. Well, why don't you go talk, and that'll give the public chance to think for a minute before we move on. So go ahead, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. Yeah, I hope Steve doesn't mine, since I believe this is a report about what's happening, not just with PROS in general, but the recent meeting. And so Beth Udovan has made a presentation from Cambrians for Aquatics with regard to the potential for having a pool built up adjacent to the high school. And so she gave, you know, quite a bit of detail on that. So I just wanted to let people know that didn't attend the PROS meeting that that's a topic that's up for, well, at least we heard about the possibility of this happening. What kind of action PROS is going to take on that is another story.
Right. Yes, I'll just piggyback on that again, more for the public. The meeting, not the most recent PROS meeting, which was last week, but the previous month, had the full presentation from Ms. Udovan, where she explained what they were proposing to do. So if anybody's curious, I suggest you go back and listen to that meeting, and you can get a pretty good indication as a full story there. Okay, I do see a member of the public. So Leah, would you please bring in Ms. Dickinson?
Hello.
Greetings.
Yes. Good afternoon, President Howell and Board. If I understand correctly, there will be a meeting on August 11th of the school board, where a presentation will be made by Cambrians for Aquatics. And so that is a key meeting. If anybody's interested, I would think that would be the appropriate meeting to be attending, where there actually will be a presentation and dialoguing with the school board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Okay, any further? Leah, do we have any comment related to PROS on written public comment?
No comment related to PROS. I do have a general written comment.
Ah, okay. So coming up shortly here. Okay, so I think we are ready. We're completing this item. So thank you, Mr. Niffen. We're looking forward to, I love watching your meetings, and I recommend it. It's good entertainment. It's free. So folks, you know, if you got nothing better to do, or even if you do, I recommend that you might want to give it a shot. So let us move on now to the general public comment. So as a reminder to everybody, this is a commentary on stuff. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Thank you. Yes, Director Gray, please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, President Howell. I wanted to clarify something that Ms. Dickinson pointed to. The August 11th agenda at the school board has not been finalized yet. So I don't believe that date has yet been set for a presentation on the pool. So just stay tuned, basically, on what's going on. But at this point, I do not believe it's been that agenda has yet been prepared, and it may still change.
Okay. Thank you, Director Gray. Yeah. Okay, so moving to the public now, just to get a little start here, there are 11 of you guys out there. That's a good-sized audience, and I'll call out the names of everyone who's got a first and last name on here. So we have Alan Dean, Christine Heinrichs, Crosby and Laura Swartz, Deborah Scott, Donald Archer, Elizabeth Bettenhausen, Michael Calderwood, Michael Thomas, Ted Key, and Tina Dickinson. So nice to see you all. Welcome, and I look forward to hearing from you. So this is now the public comment period for items not on the agenda. Dr. Bettenhausen, would you? So Leah, would you please bring her in? Okay, I see your square here, Dr. Bettenhausen. Let's see if you're. But we're not hearing you yet.
It looks like her mic is on.
Yeah.
And I brought her in immediately.
Yeah. I see it, but I don't see anything happening. And this.
She may want to leave the meeting and come back in if it's not working for her.
Yeah. Dr. Bettenhausen, you know, there seems to be an issue here. Let me see.
I'm disconnected.
There you go. We can hear you now.
Thank you very much. That was my mistake. I was doing something completely different at 5 minutes to one. So thank you very much. And I want to make an observation about a comment that the general manager just made informing us about new staff situations. If you look on at the agenda, not now, for June 23rd, on page 95, you will see, quote, the Cambria Community Services District Organizational Chart, proposed fiscal year 2022-2023. That does not contain the position of assistant to the general manager. I assume that that does not cause a significant problem for the board. I don't know that you have any say over how many administrative positions that there are, but it was proposed as part of a fiscal year budget issue. I would be very happy if the board would take up on an early agenda how it's determined what positions are activated on the various, I've got a collection now of six formats for this chart lately, and they do not all agree. How is this chart determined? Does the board ever take action? And I'd like to know what is the job description for the assistant to the general manager. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. I might be able to respond to some of that, but let's go ahead and take the rest of the questions first. Yes, so Donald Archer, please. Okay, there we see your microphone, Mr. Archer, but we're not hearing you yet. And while we're waiting for Mr. Archer, Ms. Dickinson will be after speaking after Mr. Archer. So, Mr. Archer, can you hear us? This is weird. Still nothing. Mr. Archer, are you having a problem here? It might be necessary for you to leave the meeting and come back in if you can't get your because we see your microphone on, and it doesn't appear that you're muted, but we can't hear anything. Yeah, GM Weigold, go ahead.
Yes, President Howell, we also have a written comment from Mr. Archer that you could read in lieu of hearing from him.
Well, it looks like he did go out, so let's give him a chance to come back in. So let's go ahead and take Ms. Dickinson, and then if Mr. Archer comes back, we'll try again. And failing that, we'll use his written comment. So, yes, Ms. Dickinson.
Thank you, President Howell. A short while ago, I contacted legal counsel, Mr. Carmel, and I had a simple question. I said, good afternoon, Tim. I'm writing to ask if a decision has been reached in the Windler case. Shortly after, Mr. Carmel responded, said, hi, Tina. Hope you're well. There has been no ruling issued in the Windler yet. Thanks, Tim. This is of great concern to me, as I would assume it would be to all of you. But as you are looking at getting a bond for $12 million and a yet unknown amount of interest, how can you possibly be doing that before there's a ruling on this case where the district is being sued for $28 million, if I stand corrected, if I'm wrong about that? How can you possibly engage with $7.2 million left on the EWS and a potential, I have no idea with interest what the $12 million bond, but I'm gonna say, watch out, because when the district applied for the Prop 84 funding for the grant, they fraudulently applied for it. They did not list the lawsuits they were engaged in. And so if the application in the process for the bond is asking for any litigation the district's involved in, I would hope that they would be extremely cautious and careful in how they approach it, because I already intervened when the district tried to get money for the old library. And I contacted the lender and said, the application is not being truthful. Mm. So I would advise you to be extremely careful in what you're getting into here. And also, I attended St. Simeon's CSD meeting, where we have no liaison apparently anymore. But at that meeting, the consultant engineer talked about Cambria as being a stakeholder for a regional wastewater treatment plant. We were singled out in that report, as well as Hearst Ranch and State Parks and San Simeon and Regional Board and Supervisor Gibson. And I made comments to the effect that we have just been hit with a $17 million increase for 3 years and an unknown amount for 2 more years. And Mr. Handler says on Monday at the meeting you had last week, this week, that that rate increases and growth will supply what the district needs. I think you have a lot to really think about and be very careful, because we could end up maybe in a situation of bankruptcy if you don't watch out. There's a lot to be thinking about before you go ahead with this bond. Thank you. And also, why can't you take and borrow money from the general fund and get at least one CIP done? You've done that in the past. That's been done on several occasions. Why not take a couple of million dollars and get at least one CIP that needs to be addressed before you get yourself into, excuse me, a hell of a mess? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Those are, of course, all important considerations. I don't see Donald Archer coming back. So, Aliyah, could we go ahead and read Mr. Archer's, please go ahead and read Mr. Archer's comment.
Sure. Regarding July 14th board agenda items 7A, general comment.
Yeah.
General Manager John Weigold recently told the CCSD Board of Directors that district finances are healthy and sound, and the majority of the board, with the exception of Director Farmer, listened silently to this observation. I take the majority's silence to mean that they concurred with Mr. Weigold's view of the district's fiscal well-being. I find that troubling. As I understand it, the CCSD desperately needs to address very significant infrastructure problems that will put the district in the position of financial liabilities in the untold millions of dollars. These pressing issues include addressing serious problems with the wastewater treatment plant, the pump station, the temporary water main across state park property, and who knows what else. I don't consider these obligations, in addition to the continuously ongoing debt incurred by the disastrously flawed and essentially unused but potentially obsolete plant now known as the Water Reclamation Facility, as a sign of the district's, quote, sound financial health, close quote. As the faces of the board and general manager have changed in the past few years, I had hoped that the district would be put on a more fiscally sound, financially responsible trajectory. Unfortunately, I feel that hope has yet to be realized. However, I believe the board can still seize the opportunity to take really constructive steps to bring about positive change to address the mess former boards have gotten the district into. Yet one thing is true. The district can't just keep asking the community to give them more and more money when it appears there is little to show for what has been received so far from previous rate hikes. As for the future, please be as specific as possible as to how monies are being spent. Also, I especially request that the board seriously consider the financial consequences placed upon the ratepayers of our community with the 30-year multi-million bond presently being considered by the district. Thank you for your attention. Donald Archer, Cambria.
Okay. Thank you, Leah, and thank you, Mr. Archer. Do we have any additional written comment as long as you're looking there for the general?
On items 7A and 7B.
Okay, we'll wait on that one. Yeah. Okay, one back again to the audience one more time here. Anybody else in the audience have anything they would like to say? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. I would like to just make a comment on a couple of items, and then if any of the board members wish to comment, The issue of the organizational chart, correct me if I'm mistaken, but Mr. Carmel, but basically any change to the organizational chart has to be approved by the board of directors. Is that a true statement?
No, that's not a true statement.
Oh, well, what is the relation between the board of directors and the organizational chart?
Well, the general manager has authority over the organizational chart. The board's responsible for the compensation component of it. So you don't really have the position if you don't fund it. So the salary issue will come to you and the compensation issues will come to the board.
I see. So in other words, the GM could create a position and fill it, but he might not be able to pay the person unless the board would agree to that would be the case. Is that where we're... So it's an indirect kind of thing, right?
Essentially, the board has control over the situation through the funding.
Yeah, good to know. Thank you for that. So I just want to get clarity on that one. Yes, we're all, and of course, Ms. Dickinson's comment about the Windler case, of course, we're waiting to hear from that. And there's no way to compel the judge to work any faster than she chooses to. And I think I would be correct in saying that, yes, we will have to reveal any litigation that we are involved in when we go out to try to sell bonds. Otherwise, it would be, could be presumed to be fraudulent. So, yes, we will be very careful about that. But thank you for bringing that to our attention. So any directors have anything they'd wish to respond to in terms of the general comment? Okay, we are ready to move forward then to the consent agenda. Let me see just a second here. Okay, does anybody, trying to remember how I do this. Oh, yes. First of all, does any board member have an item that they would wish to pull? That is to say, where would you actually like to debate and vote? All right, seeing none, does any director wish to make any comment regarding any of these items on the consent agenda? All right, seeing none, does any director wish to register a negative vote on any of the items on the consent agenda? All right, seeing none, I will need to take public comment and then I'll entertain a motion to approve items A, B, and C on the consent agenda. So this is public comment for items on the consent agenda. It's basically, we're consolidating preparing for the general election. We have some banking powers that have to be assigned. And then we have the Second Amendment to the Joint Powers Authority that we're going to have to deal with. All right, I see no public comment. So I'll entertain a motion to adopt the consent agenda items A, B, and C. Yes, Director Gray.
I so move.
Okay, it's been moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Director Farmer got his hand up first. So it's been moved and seconded to pass items A, B, and C on the consent agenda. Is there any debate? All right, seeing no debate, we are ready for the question. So Leah, would you be so good as to call the roll?
Yes. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer? Aye. Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Steidel? Aye. Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean? Aye. And President Howe?
Aye.
President Howe? Aye. The motion carries.
Motion passes unanimously, and items A, B, and C of the consent agenda are adopted. Actually, before we move on, I do have one question regarding an item on the consent agenda, which I forgot to mention. There is a typo. I don't think it's not material, but Mr. Carmel, does this affect any of our action? This has to do, it's page 17 of the packet, page 39 of the agreement. This is on item C, and it's paragraph C. Are you with me on that? There's a word missing. Representatives of the blank shall be appointed to serve on the board.
I'm not seeing it. You said page 17?
Of the packet. if you're not on the packet, it's 39 of the agreement, page 39 of the, oh wait, I've got it backwards. It's page 17 of the agreement, 39 of the packet. Yes, sorry, I had it backwards.
That blank is going to be filled in subsequently, so it's not material to the actions that you took.
It's not material. That's what I just wanted to be sure that we weren't just having to redo it later. Okay, that's all that I have on that. So I think we're ready to move forward to the regular business. So this will be item 7A, which is to discuss and consider the policy committee's recommendation that the board direct the policy committee to do a needs assessment regarding establishing a district code of ethics. And in a minute, I'll pass this over to Ms. Gerweigel, but I just wanted to emphasize that we're not discussing a code of ethics here, but merely, and we're not even discussing the need for one. All we're doing is discussing whether we feel that the policy committee should do a needs assessment. So having said that, GM, GM Weigel, there you are. If you could go ahead and take it from there.
Thank you, President Howell. For agenda item 7A, this is the first of two policy board items. Staff recommends that the board of directors receive, discuss, and consider a recommendation from the policy committee and consider directing the policy committee to do a needs assessment for the creation of a district code of ethics policy. As outlined in the narrative, we currently have no ethics policy. However, state law AB 1234 requires 2 hours of ethics compliance every 2 years for all directors, committee, and commission members, as well as the general manager, department heads, and the board secretary. In addition, on our website, we have the link to the training that we subscribe to, as well as of yesterday, we posted two additional items, which thanks to Director Gray's recommendation, we have two PDF files that provide additional information outside of the training, so you can look at it for a quick reference standpoint right on our website. I believe Director Farmer is also standing by as well to answer any board questions regarding this item.
Thank you, Jim Weigel. So yes, Director Farmer, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, President Howell. I do have a comment to make with regard to this, what I feel like is a very important item. But first, I'm noticing that Ted Key, who is a member of the policy committee, has his hand up. And also in attendance is Deborah Scott, who is the secretary of the policy committee. And I've requested of her to make a comment or two with regard to this item. So I'd like for both of them to have the opportunity to speak before I do.
All right, we can do that. Let me see. You and I discussed earlier about bringing Deborah Scott in as a panelist so that she could interact with the board in a little greater. Is that something that you still want to do?
I think that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, so what let's do is this. While we are taking Mr. Key's comment, if you could then, whilst that commentary is going on, if you could go ahead and bring Debbie Scott in as a panelist.
Very well.
Okay, so Mr. Key, I think we're ready for your comment. Welcome.
Good afternoon, President Howell. I am a COVID sufferer speaking to you from Zoom in a horizontal position today, so I'm glad to be able to make my comments to you in any event. You know, as the board knows, I'm speaking of this ethics issue, as the board knows, this issue arose as a gap between the CSD template handbook and our district's version. I actually think this is going to be a pretty easy gap to fill. If you want the committee, for example, to customize an existing policy from the county, state, or another local district. Look, I applaud the board for its yearly or every 2 years seminar attendance on the ethics and conflicts of interest. However, attendance to these meetings isn't really a substitute of the articulation of the values and concepts that you as directors walk away with. this issue really has nothing to do particularly with this board per se, but what we can see from the current Supreme Court conflict of interest situation, that no ethics policy creates an opening for the district to experience real chaos. So I think we should really articulate an ethics and conflicts policy to avoid such issues for the district going forward. Clearly, the policy committee stands ready to assist the board in that effort. And so I'm hoping that you guys will vote to send it to the policy committee. Perhaps it will be nothing more than consolidating, you know, the information, for example, that General Manager Weigold has mentioned, or any other cogent policies or issues, so that there is a so that we fill in this ethics gap, and so that people wouldn't be looking all over for this, that, and the other thing, and that the board would get an opportunity to tune in its own viewpoints again from what is your walkaway from your meetings, you know, to be able to articulate your beliefs and your philosophies. I think it would be a very good thing to do. I think it'd be the right thing to do. So I hope that that you will allow us to do that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Key, and let's hope that you get better soon. We could hear it in your voice, you know, so please do take care of yourself. We'll take the remainder of public comment after that we finish with the presentation to the board. So Ms. Bettenhausen, we'll wait to take you until after we're finished with the presentation, and then we'll come back to the public. So Director Farmer, back to you again. You're the driving the bus here.
Well, as I said, I have a brief comment that I wish to make on this particular item, but I'd like you to allow, if you don't mind, Deborah Scott to speak now and make a presentation of her own.
Excellent. Well, thank you. So, Ms. Scott, the floor is yours. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I really appreciate the opportunity to give some of my information that I have from experience, and that is that when you have an informal way of addressing an issue, which is what we all have right now, what you all have right now in an informal way, it leaves an opening for the board to not be protected as they should be. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation is that you do give us the go-ahead to do a needs assessment. And I've read the Code of Ethics policy number 1030 that is in the CSDA manual. It's very comprehensive. And you may not want us to go that comprehensive, but I think there are some basic things that need to be put into a formal policy that's approved by you all to really protect you all in the future.
Thank you. And now back to Ms. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. And I just want to make the observation that since I became a member of the CCSD Board of Directors, and I have observed behaviors and actions taken by both board members as well as members of the staff that, in my humble opinion, were detrimental to the functioning of the district, as well as affecting the relationships that we've had with other agencies and members of the community. From my perspective, as I said, having a code of ethics policy would provide the board as well as the staff, but especially the board, with more of an opportunity to address and comment on conduct that is essentially harmful, undesirable, and certainly unprofessional, like I said, that I have seen take place since I've been a member of the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. So at this point, let me come to the board for just questions for clarification, like we usually do, and then we'll go to the public to complete the public comment and then come back to us to debate the question. So any points for clarification? Yes, first, oh, good. All right, we'll start with Director Vice President Dean and then Director Gray, followed by Director Steidel.
First of all, I read the Code of Ethics Policy 1030, and basically what it is exactly what we do with our core values with the strategic plan, which we will be discussing next week. And what we did in the strategic plan workshop is we expanded on those core values with a statement that explained our behavior in relationship to what we felt was a core value, a code of ethic. On top of that, we also take beyond the ethics training that is required under AB 1234, we also take anti-harassment training, Brown Act training, conflict of interest training. We all fill out Form 700. So I think we are going the full mile of what we are required to do. And I'm not sure what breaches of ethics anyone has seen us do, but I think that we are following our core values and following an upstanding method of behavior. That's all I have to say. I'm not sure exactly what the purpose was of bringing this to the board. And if a policy were to be written, I would think it would be by our HR person. Thank you.
Right. Okay, before we continue, remember, this is just for clarification. And also a reminder, all we're discussing here is not the content of a policy or even whether there should be one. All we are saying is, are we friendly enough to the idea? Here's my point, and I think this is why the policy committee, and then I'm going to go ahead and get the rest of you. The policy committee is bringing this forward because they really don't want to take time to even do a needs assessment if the board is not friendly to that. Mm-hmm. Now, a needs assessment could be done, and it could be determined that that there is no need. That is a possible outcome. So I just wanted to point out what we're discussing today is simply guidance as to how whether the policy committee should go further down this road. Okay, and remember, this shouldn't be debate right now, just clarification, because we need to bring the public in so that we can respond to them as well. So yes, Director Gray, and then Director Steidel.
Thank you, President Howell. I had a question, actually.
Question.
About the titling of the this item. There seem to be two things that are going on here, and one is the idea of an ethics policy. I think is how it's described in the it's how it's described, I think, in the main agenda. Then a code of ethics, which is a little different, because the code of ethics has, as the CSDA document shows, is not just statement of values and statement of what we want to be, but it has an enforcement mechanism in it, and that is, what exactly are we going to be doing a needs assessment for? That's my question.
Oh, what are we going to do? Okay. Okay. Let's hold that question because I think we might get an answer to that one. We'll go with Director Steidel, and then I think Ms. Scott has an answer for you. Go ahead, Director Steidel.
Well, I guess first, as a clarification, I would want to know who Director Farmer feels has acted in the manner that he indicated was his experience while being on the board, whether it's any of his current board members or any other individuals. The comment in an offhanded manner without qualification created great offense. So I want to understand exactly who he thinks and why.
That's a legitimate question, although I need to defer to Mr. Carmel on some of this. We may be straying a little bit. Let's just hold that for a moment and come back to it. Let me go ahead and answer the Director Gray's question first, and then I'd like to explore what you said for a moment, Director Steidel. I'm just a little concerned there. We may be going into an area that will just lead us into that it may be a conversation that you would need to have offline first with Director Farmer, and then from there take it forward rather than do it in a public forum. That's where I'm a little concerned.
I agree. This is the second time that he has made a charge without definition or context.
Okay.
And, it's enough.
Okay, I think that I get the sense of what you're saying, which is, yes, we shouldn't be throwing around charges just willy-nilly without something to back them up. So we'll take that in and as we go forward and think of, we may need to consider something about our rules of order in this regard. I'm not too sure. But I think your objection's well taken and well-founded. Yeah. Having said that, let's see if we can get an answer for Director Gray. And Director Farmer, hold on a minute, because I don't want to get you in a back and forth at this point. Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Scott.
Director Gray hit the nail on the head with the fact that there is no enforcement. There is no enforcement of a policy or of a statement if it's not a policy that has been accepted this month.
Now you're muted.
You're muted.
You were okay before.
Yeah. Unmute.
Okay.
Try again.
Yeah. So Director Gray hit the nail on the head, and that is that there is no enforcement with the way things are right now. And who knows what may happen in the future. I know that from my experience with a state agency that there needs to be parameters whereby a body can act. And that would be the reason that I would see for a policy, but we do need to do a needs assessment. And based on the change in the bylaws just recently, this is how that process works. And so that's why we're asking you to direct us to do a needs assessment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Okay, I think let me go again, because I really want to, the issue that Director Steidel brought up is important and that Director Farmer was referring to, but let me go to the public and then come back. We're getting into debate. And then again, as a warning to Director Farmer, if this discussion starts to talk about individuals and you have to name them, that's what I want to be sure you got that we don't want to do that. I mean, there is a place where we can do that, but it's not the public forum. Okay, having said that, we have a huge number of folks wanting to talk here, so we will enforce the 3-minute time limit on that. There's 6 of you. I love seeing all this. So, okay, strap your seatbelts on board, and let's hear what folks have to say. We'll start with Christine Heinrichs, followed by Elizabeth Betthausen.
Okay, thank you very much. Other California communities have written their own ethical guidelines covering subjects such as conduct, conflict of interest, use of district property for private purposes, relationships, and communication with staff members. These are all issues that come up all the time with our board and our district. Having a code of ethics could give board members guidance on district business and give the public confidence in elected officials. Surely the district should have a standard code to apply to elected officials as the CSDA recommends. The policy committee is working from the CSDA handbook of sample policies for CSDs. The Institute for Local Government, a research arm of CSDA and others, has resources to address this in more than one page, and I can send you that link. One of the points they make is that local government ethics should be guided by 4 principles. Public officials may not use their offices for personal financial gain. Holding public office does not entitle one to personal advantages or perks. Transparency promotes public trust and confidence. And merit-based decision-making based on fair processes produces the best results for the public. Cambria's board should ask the policy committees assessment as to the need for a code of ethics. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Okay, now Elizabeth Betthausen, followed by Tina Dickerson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Yes, please go ahead. Whoops, we lost you. You're back. I don't know what happened there. You sort of disappeared for a minute. So go ahead.
Yeah, there are electrons who needed to take a biological break, I assume. So
maybe so.
That was a joke, a multidisciplinary joke. Okay, I'll go on with my comments to you sober board members. I want you please to take a vote unanimously to forward this to the Standing Committee on Policy, which you appointed. And I ask this because if there is no explicit standard of enforcement for what is in the state law, saying with conflict of interest, you do not have solid guidance when you go into closed session to analyze and to take part in your oversight of the general manager. The general manager does not have the specificity needed to exercise oversight of the staff. By what criteria is action to be judged? And that is a very crucial question for ethics. I say this in part because although I've not had a chance to look at all the documentation that was posted yesterday, according to Mr. Weigold, I assume it's not there, but my reference might be. But I want in the code of ethics used by the CCSD, I want explicit reference to definitions of sexual harassment. I want explicit reference to definitions of sexual abuse. And I want definite, explicit definitions of racist harassment. Now, you might think this is not germane to whether you forward this to the board, to the Standing Committee or not. I think it's utterly to the point because you, board, have not taken action on these. I can document with printed material some of the things to which one director was just referring. And I can do that by virtue of my standing as a citizen, not an elected official, who talks with staff. And I have over the years. You do not have an explicit enough statement as a board to exercise your oversight responsibly. And I believe that members of the administrative staff do not have explicit declarations of standards that will bind their actions when they respond to complaints from the staff. There needs to be a very careful reflection on this. And you get into these other discussions about which disclose your own interest in ethics, these discussions like you're having now. And it happens again and again and again on this question. Please refer it to the Standing Committee on Policy, asking them for clarification of the need, and then listen to them when they come back with their recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Okay, we will now have, please bring in Tina, oops, good timing, by the way. Let's start with Tina Dickinson, followed by Michael Calderwood.
Thank you, President Howell. I couldn't disagree more with Vice President Dean's assessment of this. It has become very clear to me over so many years of following the CCSD, many boards, staff members of unethical issues. I've sent you, the board, back in April, a whole thread from a public records response of unethical behavior amongst the staff. I never received a response. Not a word, and it was quite appalling. And so I couldn't agree with Ms. Scott's comments more and her suggestion to bring this about. And the very fact that Director Steidel was attacking Director Farmer in and of itself seemed unethical in this meeting today. It was inappropriate. I've seen her do this on several occasions. So please be careful of what you say, Director Steidel. Director Howell, I have a right under the Brown Act to say what I say.
Only
you
if
cannot stop me.
Yes, I can if it's not germane to the topic.
It is germane to the code of ethics and that is. I fully support the policy committee to be going ahead. And I support it, and I hope that the board will see this as an effort for further transparency, and a way of getting around the distrust that the community members have of this board and have had of many other boards. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Dickinson. I need to clarify one thing. While it is true that I can't limit what you say, but I can in certain respects. When we're on an agenda item, it needs to be a discussion related to the agenda item, and I do not consider a personal attack to on a director to be a discussion of the agenda item, and that was why I reprimanded you, Ms. Dickerson. So in the future, everybody, please be aware of that. Please keep your comments germane and exactly related to the item at hand, and try to avoid attacks against the directors or the staff. You can attack us if it is germane to the subject, and that is it. Having said that, Michael Calderwood, followed by Crosby and Laura Swartz. Yes, greetings, Michael.
Hi, how's everybody?
So far, so good.
Beautiful day in the neighborhood, huh? just a couple of observations. I think both Director Gray and Director Steidel highlighted some things that are sort of critical in my thinking. First of all, we've used the term policy. We've used the term guidance. We use a lot of different terms, so we need to tighten that up. But the most important thing in my mind is that any sort of policy around ethics, as Deborah Scott also mentioned, needs enforcement. Who's going to enforce that? There needs to be a very significant and legally binding structure around that. Otherwise, this is another tool in the general toolkit just to be punitive and to, you know, hammer against things that we don't like or that we disagree with. And I think that would be more detrimental in the long run than helpful. So clarify our definitions. What is it that we're trying to accomplish here and why? How is it going to be enforced and measured in these, you know, as we've heard, everybody's got a different view and would like to use this tool in a different way. It's got to be rock solid, or else don't bother with it, is my viewpoint. Also, as far as the, I want to be careful here, the accusations of malfeasance or unethical behavior. Again, this is something we hear over and over again with really anecdotal at best, or emotional input, be it from staff, board, community. That's really not helpful to anybody. If somebody has done something unethical, illegal, unlawful, then put it out there in the public, put a name to it, and take an action against it or disprove it or whatever it may be. But really not helpful to the community, to the board, to everybody involved in this. So those are my thoughts. Thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Calderwood. Let us now go to Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Laura part. My messages are always very simple. What I was observing is the board of directors and the staff and everybody has this training, which is wonderful. But it would be nice if the public would know what you got trained in. So if you have a policy and put it out there on the website, then we, the public, can know what to expect from our public officials. And if they do deviate, we're aware of it. So I think that's a really big argument for go ahead and making it very, very clear. Also, I have to just make a statement that I was also in attendance of the meeting where some questionable things were said to the public. I believe it was the same meeting as Mr. Farmer was at. So thank you very much for listening.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Swartz. Okay, Ted Key, please.
Well, thank you again, President Howell. This has been a spirited discussion, and I think, honestly, that from what I've been listening to, it is some of the ambiguities that exist here that have created some chaos, just as I pointed out with the, you know, the Supreme Court issue. Now, I know we're no Supreme Court, of course, but there you go. When you don't have something that really establishes the bumpers, you know, you have an opening for problems. Now, I, you know, Director Gray brought up some good points. certainly excellent point about enforcement. And of course, that, of course, would have to go through your, you know, your legal examination and all of those. I mean, this is, you know, I think creating a document shouldn't be terribly difficult. The enforcement part of it is obviously more dicey. But I think that at the end of the day, you know, it would be a positive thing for the and again, I'm not talking about this board necessarily. I'm talking about boards going forward. How do we create a lane, if you will, so that we don't have ambiguities about who said this and who did that and so on and so forth? Because yes, that is that's not productive to the community. You know, with the guidance of the board, of course, I think it would be an excellent idea to let the policy standing committee move forward, you know, to try and clarify and create some structure to this business of an ethics policy and a conflict of interest policy. And that's all I've got to say about it. But surely, just attending these seminars, which again, it's great, and it's great that you've listed them, but it does not articulate what your walk away was as board members from these events. And I think it's important to be able to do that for the public. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Key. I see no further public comment from the audience. We do, however, have a written comment. I think this would probably be the time to read that. So Leah, if you could go ahead and do that.
Sure.
And it includes both 7A and 7B, but I think might as well just read the whole thing and then.
Okay. From Jim Townsend, member of CCSD's Policy Committee. As a member of CCSD's Policy Committee, I am writing to encourage the board to develop and adopt a district code of ethics and a district climate change climate crisis policy. I understand that CCSD currently requires appropriate staff, board of directors, and appointed committee members to comply with state law AB 1234. As a former public agency official and current CCSD appointee who is required to take the two-hour online ethics compliance training every 2 years, I can attest that the online training is woefully inadequate to address the complex ethical issues that can arise in today's highly charged political climate. Developing and adopting a code of ethics consistent with the template provided by the California Special Districts Association will address two matters of import to Cambria's ratepayers. First, it will provide a clear and consistent roadmap for CCSD staff, elected and appointed officials to deal appropriately with the potential conflicts, of interest and other ethical issues that may arise in the performance of their duties. Second, it will convey to all that CCSD is committed to acting in conformance with the highest ethical standards. And given that the twin dangers to our community, catastrophic wildfires and running out of water, are both exacerbated by climate change, it would be very useful for CCSD to do its part to address the dangers to our community posed by climate change by adopting policies to address those impacts. It appears that the vast majority of California's public agencies, including special districts, have adopted both a formal code of ethics and a climate change policy. While I'm sure everyone connected to CCSD strives to operate with the highest ethical standards and concern for the climate, adoption of formal policies would send that clear message to all interested parties. Conversely, the refusal to act on either of these issues would send a different sort of message and will likely subject the district to well-deserved criticism and additional scrutiny. Thank you for your service and the opportunity to provide these comments.
Thank you, Leah, and thank you, Mr. Townsend. So I think we're finished with the public comment period, and we're back to the board, and I see Director Gray's hand up.
Yeah. Well, thank you, President Howell. Like before, I wanted to take a few minutes to sort things out as I've heard them on this, and hopefully this will help illuminate our discussion. First of all, the word ethics, term ethics seems to cover a lot, depending on who's talking about ethics. And I think that's part of the problem here. CSDA, if you read through their code of ethics, is mainly about behavior, a conduct, being a, and some of it's quite vague, but making good decisions and acting in the public interest. I hear people today talking about sexual harassment and issues like that, personnel issues. as being part of ethics. And there are other views that don't jibe with what, say, the CSDA says ethics is, and what, you know, what we're talking about here. So that's the first problem. When we talk about an ethics code, we have to decide what we're trying to, what rules we're trying to enforce, rules about what kind of behavior and what kind of actions. Secondly, there's a question of enforcement here that is pretty tricky. The ethics laws that we have now, and there's a lot of, you know, as I think Vice President Dean was saying, there are a lot of laws involved that we know about already that we are schooled in. Conflict of interest, misuse of public property, inappropriate gifts, all, you know, any number of violations that can have to do with campaign contributions. These are all enforceable, and there's laws against them. You can get fined or go to jail if you break these rules in any way. So there are enforcement mechanisms for a lot of what we're talking about with ethics. We don't need to have our own enforcement mechanisms for that. Second, the people talking about things like sexual harassment and internal issues, where there are questions of somebody having missed, you know, done something wrong to somebody else. Well, that is also enforced in its own way through the law, through the court system, through civil law, through lawsuits, through judgments from courts and so forth. And we have counsel to keep us apprised of what the rules are on that, and they're quite complicated. And they're also dealt with, even under the CSDA's own rubric, in a different area. That's personnel. There's a whole set of policies having to do with that. So this is not really what we're talking about here either. And as for enforcement, if you're going to have a rule that is kind of vague as to values, like we're going to be, you know, do the best job we can, we're going to make good decisions financially, and there's language like this in the CSDA, I would be very suspicious of any enforcement mechanism that goes beyond just saying, you know, bad, bad, or whatever. Because the CSDA manual says, the CSDA example says, for appointees, for instance, members of the policy committee, for instance, if they violate any of these rules in the code, they can be removed by the board. And I think that's, you know, extremely dangerous. You can get in political trouble and get removed. So I don't like the idea of a code of ethics that's trying to have enforcement mechanisms that are not already there in the law. Secondly, or maybe it's another point that's, you know, on top of all this, the board of directors did do a needs assessment in the ethics area 2 years ago in 2020. They looked at the whole issue of whether we need an ethics policy in a, you know, beyond what we already have, and, you know, beyond our value statements, beyond all of our trainings, beyond all of the ethics that are already built into our system. They looked at that and they said no. If you go beyond these kind of well-defined ethical issues, you're getting into areas where you have subjectivity, you have rather vague standards, and if you're going to apply to enforcement mechanisms to them, it can be abused. So they decided no, not to go ahead with it. So we already had the needs assessment, which is why I'm not going to vote for having a needs assessment, because I think there's too many unanswered questions about what we're actually talking about. There's too many unanswered questions about how anything would be enforced that is not already being enforced. And a lot of the things that people bring up as ethical standards are already in our documents. They're in our strategic plan, they're in our statement of values, and in our procedures. So that's how I'd like to start the discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Director Gray. Further comments from anybody? Director Steidel, followed by Director Farmer.
So interestingly, the context of what Director Gray was talking to was something that I was trying to lay back in my mind, because the idea of addressing something related to ethics is something that we've dealt with at least three occasions at the board level, and it keeps coming back and keeps getting thrown to the board from the policy committee. So I was just curious. I went back and I kind of looked at some of the repeated approaches to the board. And there was one prior, but in particular of the January 16, 2020 agenda talked about the consideration and adoption of a policy code of ethics and to develop an approach for implementing and understanding the policy. And during that broad discussion, it was determined that the more recent decision at that time to institute a strategic plan for the district had taken precedence. And in consideration of that and the guiding principles of the strategic plan, that plan addressed and much of the content related to the offered policy at that time. The further discussion with board members suggested that at the completion of the strategic planning process, they'd be reviewed to determine if the guiding principles and core values address the necessary components of ethics. And then in following to that on March 11th, the 2021 board meeting, the ad hoc committee on CCSD policies was formed. That was the board ad hoc. And this ad hoc committee of Director Gray and Vice President Howell was tasked to review the CSDA policy handbook in comparison with the current CCSD policies and to make recommendations to the full board regarding policies to consider for development or review and a process to determine which policies should be developed or reviewed in the future. Some fallout of that was the ad hoc, of course, brought forward a very thorough and detailed report to the board at its October 14th, 2021 meeting under regular business agenda item 6D. Now, the board considered that agenda item and approved it 5-0. However, the motion itself could be left to interpretation as to whether the consideration extended to the actual policy handbook checklist that was developed. Vice President Howe recommended the board receive the ad hoc committee report on policies and determine that district policies are to be presented in a public document titled CCSD Policy Handbook, and that policies would be organized by topic following the framework of the CSDA Policy Handbook. The CSD policies not be analogous to particular CSDA models, are to be organized in the CSDA topic areas, but not have assigned numbers. Now, although this motion addressed the checklist as being received, it did not necessarily vote by motion to do so. And it can be inferred that the checklist was received and considered with the motion voted upon. In other words, it was received, but the motion that was put forward had other considerations and was voted on as a whole. So to remove any confusion, it would seem reasonable to reconstitute the board ad hoc committee and have them update that checklist because there are actions that should be reflected with an update. And President Howell, you had personally formed an ad hoc committee previously, and I ask that you direct the ad hoc board committee be reinstated for the purpose of that update and to bring the checklist back to the board for consideration. I believe this is necessary to do to complete the original task assignment.
Okay. Thank you, Director Steidel. Yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. I appreciate the comments that are being made certainly by the public as well as the other board members. Getting back to the earlier comments made by Director Steidel, let me clarify that with regard to the various incidents that were observed by myself, as well as members of the public, and what I would consider unethical behavior does not apply to this particular board, but to actions in the past. I can recall two situations just to give a basis for my concern. There was a time when a member of the public, when we were having the meetings at the Veterans Hall, member of the public got up to speak in public comment, and one of the directors turned his back on that particular person, was in his chair, turned his chair around and had his back to the person, the member of the public during their presentation, and only turned back around when that person sat down. this individual, this particular board member, was not chastised in any way by the president of the board or anybody else. I didn't find that. I whether you call that unethical behavior, it certainly is unprofessional. There was another time, and I believe that members of the community that are attending today can remember a meeting where the general manager severely criticized a member of the public for them being in touch with other agencies and the serious harm that their being in touch with other agencies was doing to the reputation of the district. It came back from these other agencies that no, in fact, the member of the public was being very helpful in providing information that the district wasn't doing, and that the district was actually creating the harm. And as a result, the general manager had to come back and issue a public apology to the member of the public. So these are two examples of behavior by either staff, meaning the general manager, or members of the board that probably needed to be addressed by the board if we had had a code of ethics policy. We also had a member of staff who had on many occasions criticized other staff members for various items like how much food they ate, the clothes they wore, and so forth, to the point where a number of staff members actually left the district because of the way they were being criticized by this particular person, who was enabled by her boss to allow her to just do this behavior that was, as I said, harmful and unprofessional. And I believe if the board had had a code of ethics policy, even though it was granted a staff item and not that should have been overseen by the general manager and not necessarily something that should be overseen by the board, the fact that the general manager wasn't dealing with this particular issue that caused, like I said, members of staff to resign, quality members of staff to resign and get employment elsewhere because of what was happening. I feel if the district and the board was able to enforce a code of ethics policy, we would have had, first off, more confidence being assumed by members of the community, seeing that we would act on their behalf. That's number one. And number two, if we had had the opportunity to, let's say, address the behavior of staff as well as the superior of that staff person, once again, we could have perhaps allowed for other staff members to stay on board, or at least set a tone to where this type of behavior by staff would have been severely limited. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Anybody else want to speak here? Okay. I'll have just a little something to say, and then I just sort of formulate this in a way that we can act. Remembering now, what I've been hearing is the discussion seems to have gone just in a couple of different directions, which, and only one of those directions is really germane to the topic at hand. There's lots of discussion about what the contents of a code of ethics, and that's what we're speaking of as a district code of ethics. There's been discussion about what the content of that should be and whether it should be should or could be enforceable. The real question that I was hoping that we could deal with today, and which the policy committee has kind of helped us with, is the consequences of not having a policy, not necessarily what the content of the policy should be. And I did hear a little bit of discussion about that, not as much as I would have liked. But I'll just call that out. What Mr. Key mentioned, which can kind of regarding the Supreme Court, you can see the consequences of not having a code of ethics, even when such a code of ethics would not be enforceable. Because the court has no code of ethics, they cannot censure one of their members. Or suggest even that one of their members might consider recusing themselves, because there is no code or there's no common thing which all nine justices have already agreed to. So that's the consequences of not having something like this. If, and again, just if we speak of directors, if we don't have some kind of written, passed by a majority of the board, set of standards of behavior, then the board has no grounds upon which to censure one of its members, even though that censure is nothing more than a vote of censure and which there is no particular consequence. But we would not even have the grounds to do that. So in my opinion, what I'm seeing is what I'd like to, anyway, that's my own, I see two people wanting to speak, so I'll hold off any other comments I have till we hear from, let me hear from, I think Ms. Scott got her hand up, but let me do Director Gray first, Ms. Scott, and then we'll come
also,
to you.
Also, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to keep someone from talking, but Ms. Scott is not a member of the board.
Member of the board.
She's not a member of the board. We're in board discussion now.
Yes, but she I brought her in. She is in the similar condition to any kind of consultant that we might have. It's my privilege to do that. She will not be able to vote.
Point of order.
Okay, state your point.
Ms. Scott is not a member of the board. This is board discussion. You may want her to be able to voice her opinion. She's been able to do that several times. She can continue to do that as an attendee of this meeting, but expanding the board by two additional members during this time with herself and with Mr. Key having joined us as quasi board members, I find inappropriate. Neither have been elected to this board. Mm-hmm. Neither have authority, and nor does the policy committee have authority with this board. And I would suggest it's entirely inappropriate, and that isn't a matter of it being Ms. Scott and Mr. Key. It could have been anybody who was put into this position by you, President Howell, to be in this situation, and it's inappropriate.
Okay, I appreciate what you're saying. I do believe that I do have the privilege to do this. I'm looking at this the same way that we would like when Mr. Handlers comes and talks to us. Even during debate, he does sometimes get involved.
He's not a member of a standing committee.
Please do not interrupt me. Ms. Scott is here as a spokesperson for the policy committee, and she's here at the chair of the policies committee request. So I do believe that she cannot take part in discussion. But it is either that or we'd have her write a whole huge long thing that you have to deal with. At any rate, we can submit this to the parliamentarian or you can vote. But I rule the point of order is, in fact, I accept that point of order, and it is my privilege. So unless you want to take it to a vote, to vote against the decision of the chair, or if you want me to take it to Mr. Carmel, otherwise I'm treating her as a resource. And furthermore, did not bring Mr. Key in as in the same way. As you'll notice, he's not on the screen. He had two. I gave him two shots of public comment. That's it. Mm-hmm. And he was on the timer. That's my opinion on that one. So unless you want to take it to a vote to appeal the decision of the chair, it's my decision to keep Ms. Scott here as a panelist. Anyone want to do that?
I'd be willing to, because I think we're under Rosenberg's and Robert's rules. We're in discussion now. We started discussion. So I'm not, if we're going to follow our own rules and our bylaws.
We have to
follow our bylaws.
Sorry, Director Gray, but we are following Robert's rules of order exactly. And you find if you want to appeal the decision of the chair, you can do that. Yes, Director Steidel. I'm sorry, Vice President Dean.
Can we get an opinion from legal counsel, please?
You may. Go ahead, Mr. Carmel.
President Howell is right. He's the presiding officer. He can, he can make this happen, and any three of you can vote it down. It's as simple as making a motion to overrule his ruling and see if you have three votes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. So having said that, if you want to have that motion, you're certainly free to do so. Otherwise, I will have Ms. Scott go ahead and say what it is she wanted to say. Okay, seeing nobody wishing to make that motion, Ms. Scott, you have the floor.
Thank you, President Howell. I'll refrain from making any other statement because I just wanted to be helpful. And so thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, you're welcome. And thank you for coming and joining us. Yes, Mr. Gray.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say to Ms. Scott, that I appreciate her efforts. I don't want to make her feel uncomfortable that she was put into the situation and had this contention about whether she could speak or not. I don't have any negative feeling towards her motives or her behavior. It's whether she should have been speaking or not is merely a question. I had a comment to make in response to something President Howell said about conflict of interest. Conflict of interest is covered by state law. And it's quite explicit for boards like ours. We don't have the problem that the Supreme Court has. If someone is found to be acting against the public interest for their own benefit, and there are a lot of ways this can be done, that can be referred to the district attorney. Mm-hmm. And if it's a matter of illegally using campaign funds, that goes to the Fair Political Practices Commission. And both actions can result in fines and even imprisonment in extreme cases. So we don't have that problem of not having a conflict of interest policy. Just so the public is clear on that.
Okay, well, thank you, Director Gray. And while everything you say is true, the example I was giving really was not the matter of a conflict of interest, because this is a matter of a body that would like to censure one of its members for that member's behavior. There's no issue as to conflict of interest. It could have been a number of other possibilities. I'll give you one example is the example that Director Farmer brought, where a director was not behaving properly with the public. A case where, there wouldn't be any real enforcement, but the board could have censured that person if there was some kind of a already established policies regarding the kind of behavior that a director should be showing to the public. That's just an example of if you don't have a rule, then you can't very well fault somebody for breaking that rule. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm trying to get back to the issue of the needs assessment, not the content of the policy itself. Yeah, please go ahead, Mr. Carmel.
I just wanted to clarify, you do have censure power. It's based on conduct. You don't need a specific rule in order to censure a board member.
Really? Okay. Well, this is good to know. Thank you. So we'll all be on our toes. Nevertheless, I'd have to think it would be simpler, or at least if there was a standard set forth, it would be a little easier. But I see your point. So again, the issue here is, go ahead, Director, Vice President Dean.
Okay. I have a question. So what is the next step after a needs assessment? Because it sounds to me like what we heard today was already a report of a needs assessment. So what is the next step once a needs assessment is done?
Once a needs assessment is done, we can look at 7B, and that will be the what would happen. And this is where if the needs assessment is done, the policy committee gives that needs assessment to the board. The board then examines that, and here, as you can see here, if you look at the wording of 7B, that the next step, according to the bylaws, is that the board, after receiving the needs assessment from the policy committee, and presuming that the board agrees with the needs assessment, that the board would then appoint an ad hoc committee, as it says here, to make recommendation to define the needs of, what the parameters of such a policy should be, and make a recommendation to the board as to what entity should be creating that policy. So that would be the next step, and we're definitely not there. That what we're doing is saying the response to this particular item would be, yes, please go forward with a needs assessment. Which doesn't mean that there would necessarily follow from that the board would adopt a policy. It was just saying that it would be legitimate for the policy committee to go ahead and spend some time to review the needs or lack thereof, and then come back with a well-considered report showing point by point why and how a policy committee would be helpful. Again, not the content, but just the need. So did that answer your question? So we're not there. All we are doing is saying to the policy committee, go spend some time and come back to us with a report about the need or lack thereof of a code of ethics. And then we would take the step, once we get that back, of determining whether to move forward and how to move forward with an ad hoc committee. Or we might just say, no, we thank you for the needs assessment, but we're unconvinced. That's the other another way to go. Did that answer the question?
Yes, but I did feel like this already was a presentation of a needs assessment.
It's a tricky business, because when we were all discussing, it was pretty much we were focusing on, I was trying to get you all back to thinking, here's my concern. I'm not so concerned with what the policy committee will come up with. And I'm quite willing to accept them coming up with the fact that they determined that there was no need. Or that it could be the other way. What concerns me is, and why this is coming before, this is actually not, this is the policy committee, this is them talking to us. Basically, they are saying, you know, we see that this is a situation, we think that it would be useful for us to do a needs assessment, but we don't want to spend the time if you're going to come back and just not even consider what we're saying. In other words, if you have no interest whatsoever in any kind of a code of ethics policy for the district, if you have no interest in that and nothing the committee could ever tell you that would convince you otherwise, then we should definitely direct them to not go forward in this way. But if you're willing to consider the possibility that if they can give you reasonably good arguments backed up by documents or whatever is needed, if you're willing to accept And willing, what you're doing now is we're trying to say, are you willing to consider an argument? If you're not willing to consider any argument, no matter how complete, then we certainly don't want them to be wasting their time. So that's how I interpret this item. And I think that was the intent, because I did listen to the policy committee meeting when this came forward. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is they're trying very hard to follow the directions that are given in the modified bylaws. They're trying extremely hard to do exactly what this board has asked them to do. And they're actually going a step further, because they didn't really have to come to us with this. They could have gone ahead and done the needs assessment. So they're actually going one step further. They want to come to us before they even start the needs assessment. And so this is what I'm trying to get across. And so what we're doing now is just providing direction to them. Nothing more. So I think, having said that, we need to get a motion on the floor so we can move forward. And we can still debate the motion. Yeah, go ahead, Harry. Director Farmer.
I'll somewhat agree with Vice President Dean that perhaps, and I'm probably as guilty as anybody else, or maybe I'm the main guilt person here with regard to, actually, by my statements, provided the reason that we need a code of ethics policy. But what I would like to do is just, you know, make a motion that the board of directors direct the policy committee to do a needs assessment regarding establishing a district code of ethics policy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. It's been moved that, is there a second to that motion? Okay. Well, I'll second the motion. So it's been moved and seconded that the board direct the policy committee to do a needs assessment regarding establishing a district code of ethics. Do we have further debate? This is actually probably where we should have started and then debated it. But yeah. Okay. I see no further debate on the subject. Except the one last thing that I'm saying, remember that all you're doing is you're either saying we'll never consider, it doesn't matter what you guys come back with, we are not going to consider. This is what this means, basically. If you, whatever you guys come back, we will not consider a code of ethics policy. That is what a no vote means.
We heard it the fourth time.
Okay, just want to be sure.
Since we're in discussion still.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
It does not need to be interpreted that way. All it needs to be interpreted as, at this time, we do not need a needs assessment. And because it can, it's not never, we're just saying at this point in time, right now, we don't need one. It can be interpreted that way too.
That's true. You're absolutely right on that. You're absolutely right. As I reread it, I mean, it's not, we're not moving that they don't do a needs assessment. That would be the other way to go. So it does leave it open that at some time in the future, without board action, the policy committee all on its own could decide to go ahead and do a needs assessment. It leaves them with that option. If you don't want to leave them with that option, we need to amend the motion. Director Steidel.
But I thought the whole purpose in doing this was to make that determination so they wouldn't feel like they were wasting their time. So why would we send them away and then have them waste their time?
Could you rephrase that? I thought I understood you, and then I, as you were going along, suddenly...
Well, you indicated that the reason that this was being forward is that the committee felt very strongly that they wanted to know what the board wanted them to do, because they didn't want to go out and to, you know, spend their time developing all of this if it wasn't something that was of interest to them. So then to drop to a subset of saying, well, they could just go away and do it anyway. And I'm saying, I thought that this entire premise of our voting on this was because they didn't want to do that.
I see what you're saying. And that is absolutely true what you're saying. All I was saying is that the way the motion is currently worded, it's just that we're not directing them to do a needs assessment, but we're also not directing them to not do a needs assessment, which is what I was trying to get at. All this motion, Director Farmer's motion, was to direct the policy committee to do a needs assessment. The board chooses not to direct them to do that, if that's the way the vote goes. It doesn't follow that the board directs them to not do one. It just, that's the way I interpret it. Now, I guess you could, there's a couple ways of looking at that. But if you didn't tell me not to do it, then yeah, maybe I'll go ahead and do it anyway kind of situation. My feeling, however, is that if the members of the policy reviewing this meeting could take what, you know, I'm certain that they're not going to spin their wheels doing something when they feel there's no hope, that this board has absolutely no interest in pursuing this particular line of thinking. So are you comfortable with the wording of the motion as it stands? Because the other way to do it is say direct them not to do a needs assessment. That would be an entirely different situation, but I'm not hearing that. Okay, I think then seeing no further debate, the only thing I would say is, in my own opinion, this is my own statement regarding this, my feeling is I'm not afraid of what they're going to turn up. And so if they want to spend their time, if they feel that they want to spend their time doing this, I'm certainly willing to have them do that. And I'm willing to, I would be willing to give whatever they come back with due consideration. Not necessarily, I'm not agreeing to agree with it, but I would be willing to give it due consideration and not reject it out of hand without a careful consideration. That's all. So that would be the way I would deal with this. Having said that, and seeing no further, anybody else have anything to say? I think we're ready for the question. And Ms. Dickinson out there in the world, we've already had the public comment on this, so you might want to reserve your thoughts for the next item. All right, Leah, I think we're ready for the roll call. Let me rephrase it again. It's been moved and seconded that the board direct the policy. It's been moved and seconded that this board direct the policy committee to do a needs assessment regarding establishing a district code of ethics. So we're ready for the roll.
Okay. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer? Aye. President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell? Aye. Director Steidel?
No.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat
nay.
That? Director Steidel? Nay. Director Gray?
Nay.
Director Gray? Nay. And Vice President Dean?
I would have. Have to be last. Okay.
So that sounds like, is that an aye?
Well, they've already done the work. It sounds like all they have to do is come back with a report. Yes.
Okay. Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye.
All right. Motion passes 3-2. In dissent are Director Steidel and Director Gray. Thank you, everybody. So, Policy Committee, I think you have your work cut out for you on this issue. And thank you, Ms. Scott, for joining us for this particular discussion. I do appreciate your help on that. All right, we're ready to move forward now to the next item, which is 7B. And this is Sorry, Vice President Dean.
Can I have a 2-minute break, please?
We certainly can. I think it'd be a very good idea. How about five? 5 minutes?
Okay.
Five, everybody. That would put us back at 2:55, according to my clock. So we'll see you all back then. So. and try to focus in on what we're doing here. Remember that we're going to, if we choose to do this, we're, in other words, now we are presented with a needs assessment, which I'm sure you've all read. And now the question is, having been given this needs assessment, shall we move forward to appoint an ad hoc committee to continue with the process as it's described in our bylaws? So that's the subject at issue. The content of the of a climate change policy is not really at issue here. What we really want to do now is evaluate the needs assessment and see if we agree with it and if we wish to take some kind of action. That would be my interpretation of the item. Okay, so having said that, GM Weigold, how about if you would go ahead and introduce the item and then we'll go from there.
Thank you, President Howell. Agenda item 7B is discussion and consideration to form an ad hoc committee to define the policy needs and parameters for the creation of a CCSD climate change / climate crisis policy and make recommendations to the board of directors and the policy committee regarding creation of such policy. Staff recommends that the board receive, discuss, and consider a recommendation from the policy committee and consider forming an ad hoc committee to define the policy needs and parameters for the creation of such policy and report back to the board. Attached to the staff report is a memo to Director Farmer, the chairperson of the policy committee, outlining the needs assessment for the climate change policy. And as I spoke before, previously with Director Farmer, he's standing by to provide further background information on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Weigold. So yes, Director Farmer, why don't you take the floor here and take us through this?
Well, actually, I believe that this this particular statement in the back, and of course, while we can see it, we as members of the board, the members of the public, unless they are have gone to the agenda, the agenda that's available at the district website, they probably can't see this statement in the back. But basically, what is remarked on here is the fact that this community, the entire planet, is especially the western part of the United States, but the entire planet is in a climate emergency, and that anything that we can do, we meaning the district, with regard to addressing any items, whether it's vehicles that don't pollute, in other words, electric vehicles or water saving fixtures or any type of effort that the district makes to use more recyclable products and not products that we just throw away, or we do something with regard to how do we best address the needs of the natural environment around us. These are serious points that perhaps by having a climate emergency policy, the district can be even more assertive in moving forward in these areas.
Okay, thank you, Director Farmer. Let me see, anybody else here? So question
in other areas, I should say.
I'm sorry, did I interrupt you too soon?
No, I interrupted you.
Oh, okay. Questions for clarification from the board. You're all pretty clear about the meaning of what you have in front of you here. Okay, then we'll go to the public for public comment. So this is public comment on 7B. And again, I'll remind everybody, this is the, just so everybody's clear about what we're doing, this is the board deciding whether or not to appoint an ad hoc committee to pursue the issue of a climate change policy. That's the short version. So having said that, I see we have Tina Dickinson, followed by Ted Key. Okay, Tina, you're still muted. Ms. Dickinson, yeah, we can't. You're still muted, so we can't hear you. Okay. Any Leah? I think let's see, Ms. Dickinson, one more thing, and then what we'll do is, can you tell anything about what's going on back over there?
No, she has been allowed to talk, and I've requested that she unmute multiple times, so it's all not right. The meeting setup.
Okay, Ms. Dickinson, we're going to go on, and then if you wish to come back in, we'll try again. So right now, let's move on to Ted Key. Greetings.
Good afternoon again, President Howell. I'm still here.
Glad to know that.
So anyway, when you and I were on the committee, we worked on this policy together. And, you know, I don't think there's really any debate anymore about the question about CO2 in the environment. We see it every day right here. And we all have to play a part in reducing our carbon footprint. But look, Director Steidel mentioned a month ago or earlier that the board has a fiduciary responsibility. And as a ratepayer, I couldn't agree more. So we need to look at the financial realities moving forward on vehicles, which fortunately we don't need right now. The arrival of electrics is here. Ford alone plans to build 230,000 F-150s next year, and the fleet version isn't all that far priced from the gas model. It certainly doesn't take long to appreciate the difference between $200 fills and $20 charges, let alone zero tune-ups and fluid changes. Together, the car companies are investing billions into electrics, looking to gain market share, and that future is here. Next time around, I strongly suggest that the board look carefully at electric automobiles, because better performance and lowest cost per mile. So when this does go to the ad hoc committee, let's look at, put it under the microscope of financial reality. Passive solar, cheapest price per kilowatt, hands down. I'll use myself as an example. I'm paying the same price covering the cost of my solar house battery unit that I would have for power anyway. At payoff in 5 years, power costs me zero. Imagine how much that would affect diesel district fuel costs down the road. Look no farther than Morro Bay High or the county to see how others are building passive capacity. There are many things the district is doing. Currently, for example, motor and other equipment upgrades, reducing WWTP energy costs and maintenance. Now that's the way to go. Define it now in a policy. Why not? Make it a point that we look towards the future. The finance standing, working with the board ad hoc, is sure to find that going to green reduces costs, which is something that future boards can point to when the inevitable rate increases come. Let's really look hard at codifying our environmental prerogatives, not only to do the right thing, but to save buckets of money while we do it. I will eagerly stand ready to provide assistance for the ad hoc financial and R&I committee analysis. And I certainly want to urge this board to move this forward to the ad hoc analysis. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Key. So this will be Christine Heinrichs, followed by Elizabeth Bettenhaus.
Thank you. I asked the board to appoint this ad hoc committee to take this to the next step. As with water conservation, everyone needs to be on board to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and reduce the effects of the climate crisis. The California Air Resources Board appeals to local governments in its draft 2022 scoping plan, which I will send you the link. Local government actions are crucial for supporting attainment of the state's climate goals. There's lots Cambria can do, such as buying emission-free vehicles and reducing miles traveled. When ideas like this come along, I look at the many ways Cambria could be a national, even an international model community in climate crisis action. We've got everything going for Cambria: small size, intelligent citizens who have the time and willingness to be involved, natural resources to conserve. I strongly support the board in directing this ad hoc committee to take the next step on a climate crisis policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Actually, I see Michael Thomas next, and then Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Okay, am I audible?
Yes.
I definitely want to provide my support for this ad hoc committee. There are very few things that are more existentially threatening as the climate crisis. So I'm aware that establishing a policy is of limited impact. Of greater impact is the impact that policy can have on the hundreds of decisions that will be made over the future. So I think that such a policy should really be oriented towards influencing the decisions that CCSD makes in every aspect. I promote the concept of every little thing we do. I posted a suggestion that if your trash can is half full, don't put it out, simply for the reason that if a 10 ton or 20 ton garbage truck has to make one last stop, that's just a few ounces less. So everything we can do is one small step, but and big steps as well. So I'm certainly in favor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Okay, now Elizabeth Bettenhausen, and she looks to be the last.
Thank you very much, President Howell. I urge the directors to adopt the proposed appointment of an ad hoc committee, and specifically the needs are, many of the needs, but not all, but many needs are listed for you on the second page of this, a whole list of seven reasons that express the need already. So you need an ad hoc committee that can acknowledge the need and change the words to form policy. And that is not a snap activity. So you'll need somebody who can really write clear English, number one, on your ad hoc committee. So good luck in appointing whoever this is. But I urge you to move ahead with this. Otherwise, we're dragging our feet as a community. I think that Mr. Thomas is right. We definitely need this existentially. And I think Ms. Heinrichs is right that we need to take a leadership role, not simply drag our feet. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. I see we have another commenter. Scott Anderson, please.
Good afternoon, directors. And as always, thank you for your volunteer service. In listening to the previous comments, I am 100% in agreement with every single thing that was said. And so eloquently said, I'm not going to belabor the point. I'm just another voice in the community that can't understand why this isn't the most common sense approach that could possibly be taken to, noticeably affect our future, our immediate future, and send a very good message to the community, which I think is an environmentally aware group of people. So it's just in support of the community as much as anything else. That's it for me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Seeing no further public comment, do we have any, Leah, any written comment besides the one from Mr. Townsend, which you already read?
No, there's no further written comment.
Thank you. Okay, I think it's back to the board. So, starting with Director Gray.
Thank you, President Howell. Yeah, I had a question to start out. I know that the procedure that we adopted for these policy committee recommendations does call for the appointment of an ad hoc committee. But in this case, it seems to me that the subject matter, and as well as the specific steps that are being outlined here as possibilities, seems to go right up into the wheelhouse of the Resources and Infrastructure Committee. And I don't know if Vice President Dean would agree with me that they have the time to do this, but is it possible to have this referred to them? Because they have, one, they have the relationship, the connection, the knowledge base of the district engineer. They already have a lot going for them in terms of what they know and what they've learned. in the resources area from Mr. D'Enzo and Mrs. Bland and so forth. And I have some fear that if we keep getting these, you know, appointing ad hoc committees, we're going to have kind of a glut of ad hoc committees doing a lot of different things that might, one, duplicate, not duplicate each other, but duplicate what the standing committees do. So my suggestion is, if it's possible under our bylaws now to have this referred to the R&I committee, that would be, to me, the preferred course.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Director Gray. Before I call on Director Farmer, just for clarification, Director Gray, are you saying that we should just jump, just go ahead and instruct the R&I committee to produce a policy, or are we
going
to do a needs assessment?
Assessment's been done, but whatever the ad hoc committee would do. In other words, the ad hoc committee is not asked to come back to produce a policy. They're asked to come back to say whether a policy is feasible and in what basis. So it's, again, the question of whether there should be a policy, like an actual document that lays out principles and is in our policy handbook, or whether steps can be taken in some of these areas. And some of these areas are actually, things are already being done. Whether steps can be taken in some of the recommended areas and whether other things can be done to reduce greenhouse emissions, like, for instance, alternative brine disposal plans rather than trucking it 50 miles away, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. You know, have them come back with a report on the feasibility of whatever steps they come up with that might be helpful in reducing emissions.
I'm trying to get this because I'm trying to keep this as close to our bylaws as we can.
I understand that.
What you're saying. It sounded like what you were saying was that we're kind of assuming the ad hoc committee had already come back to us and we had decided that we were jumping that step and passing it on to R&I to actually come up with policy recommendations. That was sort of what I was taking from what you're saying. So I just want to get some clarity on your comment.
I mean, I guess I would say if the R&I committee can define the policy needs and parameters for the creation of a district climate change, climate crisis policy and report back to the board, I would think the R&I could do that. Taking the wording and the recommendation.
But you're not saying that the R&I should actually produce the policy.
Well, whatever we're asking the ad hoc committee to do, I think R&I can do.
Okay. Well, again, from the bylaws, as I recall, review the needs assessment and make a recommendation regarding the creation of such a policy. That's the short one. If I recall the bylaws, it's take the needs assessment, determine the parameters, and who should actually create the policy, and then bring that back to the board. That's how I interpreted that. But let me go on. I don't want to get caught between you and me.
Into it.
I just want to get clarity as to what I think I understand what you're getting at. Let's go with the Director Farmer, followed by Director Steidel.
Thank you, President Howell. Yeah, I appreciate the suggestion that Director Gray has made, and perhaps to some degree forming a subcommittee of the R&I committee to address this issue might not be a bad idea. And ad hoc committees, as he said, they've become more prolific and therefore maybe less effective in some fashion or another. All I can, the statement I want to make is this was initially having a climate emergency or a climate crisis policy was initiated by a member of the policy committee, Mr. Ted Key, and he spoke very eloquently at the beginning of the discussion of this item. So I wanted to give hats off to Ted. Also, with regard to a comment that Mr. Thomas made with regard to, you know, if your trash can is just half full, don't put it out. You know, just that one less stop puts a little less pollution into the air. If I'm not mistaken, Mission Country Disposal recommends that if your trash, whatever it is, whether it's a recycling or a green waste or the trash can, that if it's not half full, don't just put them out if they're totally full. That's the most expeditious way to do this for a variety of different reasons. They can do it quicker and therefore less pollution in the air. So I just wanted to bring that up. that's already, I think, a policy, like I said, of mission country disposal that we need to take, that we should be observing. You know, overall, the district, and this has been commented on before, we are very fortunate to live in such a wonderful area. We're very fortunate to have very intelligent people living in this community. And in some way or another, we should be able to have as many people participate, whether it's members of the various various committees or members of the public, participate in ultimately developing a climate crisis policy and doing as much as we can, maybe even having, I don't want to suggest a town hall, maybe that's going a little too far, but having as many people as possible come up with ideas as to how to best have a policy for this great community that we live in. I probably could say more, but let me just leave it at that for the moment. And maybe I'll come up with something a little bit further on down the road.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Director Steindl.
Thank you, President Howe. What Director Gray proposed intrigues me because if I look, for instance, at the items that are listed out in the attachment to the agenda item, the majority of those we've already taken action on, or there's something already in place to address it. Some of it actually has to do with cost effectivity, which those kinds of things in the process of budgeting actually are looked at. The implementation of water saving fixtures, encouraging those. We have programs in place for that. We've got programs with flumes that you can buy so people can monitor themselves. We encourage them to do that. The assessment for utilization of recyclable products in everyday activities. I mean, I can, you know, Mr. Weiko can jump in, but for instance, in the district offices, they're already doing that. That's something that they've taken an action towards already. So I'm trying to think of things of how this affects the district directly, because we can't impose something on the community. We can suggest that they, you know, contribute to it in some ways, but we can't impose anything. We can only look to ourselves for the things we might be able to change. Partnering with other agencies to enhance forest management, including defensible space monitoring. That's already happening. In fact, there was quite a discussion at the RSA focus group yesterday about training that's available for defensible space monitoring that people could participate in the training and potentially eventually become people who would assist others in the community with that. So all of those kinds of things are already ongoing. And I don't know that those have to fall into a policy because they're specific actions of a specific time. So the policy, if it's based on that, would age very quickly if what you're doing is going through and determining those things. Supporting Cambria's Dark Skies Initiative, the board has done that. We took a board motion that gave our commitment to the Dark Skies Initiative and Beautify Cambria. The alternative green sources for the community, that could be something down line, but that's something that would take if you're talking about wind or you're talking about things that we probably don't have a lot of control over. I don't see that we're going to be putting windmills up in town, for instance, supporting. I don't know that there would be many people in the community that would support putting windmills out in the ocean or air tunnel, whatever the appropriate term for them is. There are any number of things here which are already being addressed. However, the fallout of things that potentially we might be able to address and that we should keep in the forefront of our mind, I think probably has more to do with the idea of renewable power. We really don't have office buildings. We don't own the buildings that we I mean, the offices, for instance, that the district is in. We do not own those offices. We can't influence that. But things like the plants themselves and the tertiary systems and everything. And it's interesting that in actuality, a lot of basis for the whole IGA program that's gone on has had that as a basis because it initiated originally with being able to find savings in electrical applications. And a portion of what's going on with the revisions that are going to be implemented within the wastewater system have to do with power and use of power. So it almost naturally takes it in the direction that Director Gray was suggesting. What I'm not sure of is how practical that is right now with the load of work content that is falling out in the utilities and the R&I, and that would be more directly addressed by Vice President Dean and Mr. D'Enzo, and whether we have the ability, as you had indicated, of being able to make that assignment.
Thank you, Director Steidel. Yes, Mr. D'Enzo, I see your hand is up. Would you like to weigh in on this?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, President Howell. So I wanted to interject into this topic because this is something I've been following very closely. And as a matter of fact, it's something that we were hoping we could do sometime in the near future formalize an official climate action plan. And the reason why I say that, is because it as is our one of our tasks here, when I first started working at the district, we started engaging the state in with the SRF grants and loans process. And at the time, we were scored based on different criteria. And one of the things that Cambria was missing was a climate change action plan. And they weren't accepting like a one page, hey, we care about the environment and stuff like that. It was a formalized plan. As a matter of fact, the example that they pointed us to was the one that was done at Morro Bay, the city of Morro Bay, which is a 254 page plan. So, at the time I was, you know, looking for a nexus for us to do this because SRF really the state revolving fund right now, they don't really give out grants only to disadvantaged communities. So I kind of tabled it in my mind, but knowing that this is something that we would need in the future to help us with grants in the future. So knowing that, at the same time, our staff here, we didn't have the bandwidth for this, but it is something that's important that we need to do. So my opinion on the matter is, I think the first big step is to have a policy, a climate change policy, like what's being suggested here. But the deliverable should be a climate change action plan. And I think once that's all outlined, it could be vetted before the board. It would need to be budgeted because we would need to hire an environmental consultant to write the plan and actually to do the studies relating to the plan. So it's not something haphazard that we would do in the next couple of months. It would need to be vetted. And it would need to go to the board, and we need to go to the budgeting process. And I think an official policy that defines the climate priorities that Cambria has would be the basis for moving forward with such a plan. So that's my opinion in that one.
Thank you for that. That helps to clarify a few things, I think. Yeah, I have something to say, but I think I'll let you guys speak first. I saw Vice President Dean and then Director Farmer. I do want, before we start this, we don't want to get too far down the road in terms of actually designing a policy. the real issue here is, do we accept the needs assessment from the policy committee? And then the next question is, having accepted it, what do we do about it? So I just wanted to kind of try to stay focused on that as much as we can. So first, Vice President Dean, and then Director Farmer.
So the way that this agenda item is written, do we have to form a board ad hoc committee before it can go to the R&I committee? Or can it be appointed directly to the R&I committee for R&I to form their own ad hoc committee to work on this?
Okay, I can give you sort of an answer. If we were to follow our bylaws to the letter, which I don't want to, I'm looking at the clock here and trying to think how to get through this. If we were to follow our bylaws to the letter, no, we could not do what you suggest. But of course, those are our bylaws. Mm-hmm. the bylaws require that if we accept the needs assessment, that is, we agree with the needs assessment, that there needs to be our next step, according to the bylaw, and I'll read it. I'm not saying we should follow it, but we should at least be clear about it. If determined that a policy is required, the board will assign a board member ad hoc committee to define the policy needs and parameters. The result in policy parameters will be brought to the board members for consideration and, as needed, directed to the appropriate resources for policy development. So it is true. What you say is, yes, the R&I committee could be the ones that actually develop the policy. But it's a question here is, the first thing we got to do is accept that a policy is needed. And then if a policy is needed, how do we handle it? We don't necessarily, I think because these are our bylaws and we're not governed by the standing committee bylaws, it seems to me that we could go ahead as Director Gray suggests. But first, I think we need to decide whether we accept the needs assessment from the policy committee. That would be my advice. So we do that first and then raise the question is, pass it to R&I committee to come up with a policy or pass it back to or do an ad hoc who will then recommend to the you see where I'm going with that. Okay, let me get.
Do we need two votes though? Can we just combine them?
You could, but it seems complicated. I think it might be simpler if we do it because we could agree on one thing, but maybe not quite on the other. Mm-hmm. So it might be good to get, if we at least agree, do we need a policy? Then we can probably dispense with that discussion and think about what do we do next. If you don't mind, I think that
that's fine too. I just want to ask Tim, Mr. Carmel, maybe just to clarify about how much we're bound by these standing committee bylaws. I believe we can act, say, to sort of cut out this extra step of the ad hoc committee, or can we?
That's a good question.
Under the bylaws.
Yeah, I would
under our powers, I guess. And,
well, let's see what he has to say. I think we can, but let's shall we place a bet? let us see what he has to say.
Under Rosenberg's rules, yes, the three of you can overrule your bylaws and do something different. So,
okay,
it's available. I was sort of concerned with the actual Brown Act description, but I think there's flexibility there too.
Okay, good. Thank you. So that we are free to do as you suggest, but we should at least acknowledge that that's what we're doing if we're not. Yeah. Okay, Director Farmer.
Did I miss something? Didn't Vice President Dean have her hand up? And didn't you call on her? Did she already speak and I missed it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear.
Mine wandered.
Director Dean, would you care to repeat?
I think in retrospect, I believe I was, I was listening.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say, well, this looks really great. I think I was wandering in my own thoughts with regard to something else that has to do with this. So my apologies, Vice President Dean. With regard to, I really want to thank Ray for stating that the district needs to formalize, as he called it, a climate change, an official climate change action plan. I would just reword that, an official climate crisis. action plan, because it's more than just change. It's a crisis that is ongoing. I think it needs to be seen in that perspective. It would be interesting to certainly, I think she's maybe encouraging all of us board members and members of the public to go to the City of Morro Bay's website and see what it is that they've come up with, their 254-page plan. But my particular concern, I think overall, is what we're talking about here is our relationship with the natural environment. You know, we can't live without the world around us. That the quality of the air, the quality of the forest, the quality of the waters around us. So anything that we do that affects our very existence depends on the health of the natural environment. And therefore we're seriously obligated to do the best we can to live in harmony with Mother Nature. I don't think there is any doubt about that. And that I think needs to be the crux of whatever policy that we come up with. That's just my own personal feeling. And I just want to put that out there. I know we're coming from different directions in how we're addressing this particular item, but I think this is the basic underlying factor as to where we as humanity need to approach the climate crisis and whatever quote policy unquote that we come up with. I just want to put that out there.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Anybody else? I actually have an idea for a motion, and maybe we can combine them as Director Gray suggests. Let's try this, see if this works. Before I do, I need to ask Vice President Dean, if we were to assign this to the R&I committee, let's assume that the motion is something like we accept the policies committee's recommendation that the district needs a climate change committee and further direct the R&I committee to come forth with such a policy. Is that something?
You want the R&I committee to write a policy or to come up with recommendations for what is needed in a policy?
Oh, I like your second one better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because I would like to come forth first with information on what we see as, you know, would be useful in a policy rather than actually writing the policy. I also want to be very conscious of staff time, particularly Mr. D'Anzo, because we are in the middle of this IGA process and trying to get these projects done. So I want to do this kind of as an ad hoc committee of R&I if possible, so we do not involve too much of the staff's time.
Okay, so but you are friendly to the idea, and I didn't want to propose something and load work on it. I think what you said is, so let me phrase this then, that I move that this board accept the need for a district climate crisis policy as indicated in the needs assessment presented by the policy committee, and that this board further directs the R&I committee to do whatever to define the policy needs and parameters for the creation of a CCSD climate crisis policy, and then and come back to the board with that. Is that clear? We can shorten it if you like. Director Steidel.
I understand the desire for the term crisis and the value that it carries for the people that had made the recommendation. The only thing that concerns me about it was what Mr. D'Anzo had defined for us, because that climate change action plan is a specific recognized document, it seems to me, that it either carries state or federal definition to it.
Yes.
And it can't be a climate crisis action plan. It's a climate change action plan. And I'm just concerned that if you start using the term crisis in it, we may get it cross purposes and create an issue for Mr. D'Anzo.
Yes, I see your point. And furthermore, I see in the wording of the needs assessment that was presented to us they do refer to it as a climate change policy. And since we're accepting the report and agreeing with the report, then we need to retain that verbiage, I think. I understand the desire to put the crisis in there. There is certainly action, but we need to have clarity. And the other thing is avoid a Chicken Little situation. So we need to move forward, but we need to move forward deliberately and with consideration of all the various interlocking parts. So I think the motion as it stands, before I call you back, let me repeat it. We didn't get a second, so let me repeat it.
I'll second it as long as there were changes.
Okay, well, let's try that. Let me see if we can get the change right then. So to accept the, as I just said, to accept the report from the needs assessment from the policy committee for a district, a CCSD climate change policy. And what did I say? And request the R&I committee to come back with, to define the policy needs and parameters for the creation of such a policy and come back to the board with a report. Is that secondable?
Secondable. I had a quick question for counsel because of he mentioned a Brown Act issue. Do we need to say anything like R&I committee in lieu of an ad hoc committee or anything like that? Do we need to say anything like that?
It's not going to change the character of the action. So I don't think you do.
Okay. So we're good. Okay. So it's been moved and seconded what I said, right?
Right.
We'll try to get it. Leah, eventually we'll come back to you and hope we can get this right. Harry, our Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. I just want to mention, by the way, that since we both wear glasses, maybe our vision is compromised at one point or another, whether we're wearing them or not. But under the subject matter, as well as under the recommendations, as well as under discussion in this particular item, it says CCSD climate change / climate crisis policy. And I think all we need to do is turn on the TV and watch the news and know that we are in a crisis, or realize that with regard to our little community here, other than the atmospheric river that we had in late January 2021, and the 11 inches of rain that we received toward the end of December in 2021, we've only had 10 inches of rain other than that. And it's only rained barely a handful of days in the last rainy season. I think that to me sounds like a water availability crisis.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm sorry. I may have interrupted you. Were you finished there?
Sure. Okay.
Anybody else want to speak? Yes, Vice President Dean.
Well, I think we all can agree that we are in a crisis. I believe what Mr. D'Enzo said we needed was something specifically titled Climate Change Action Plan. So can we clarify that with Mr. D'Enzo, whether that is definitely the way it needs to be worded?
Mr. D'Enzo?
Climate Change Action Plan was one of the titles that was given, but you know, the city of Morro Bay just simply calls it the Climate Action Plan. So I don't think it needs to be wordsmithed that much about it, but you know.
Thank you. Okay, so any further discussion? All right, seeing none, I think we're ready. Vice President Dean, yes, please.
Well, since all we're doing is looking at the parameters and the policy needs for this, we can call this committee the Climate Change Climate Crisis Action Committee. I mean, you can call it what you want, but we know what the final plan that Ray needs is, a climate action plan.
Right.
With or without an adjective.
Yeah, so if you, if our, it's just a, pardon me, Director Gray, if R and I, they can call their subcommittee anything they want.
Right, I was going to say. Yeah,
so, it could be the Mickey Mouse Club. I don't know, it's whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So not that. Okay, I think if there's no further discussion, Leah, do you have the, can you read the motion back to us?
I will do my best.
Thank you.
So President Howell is moving that the board accept the needs assessment for a district climate change policy and direct that the R&I committee define the needs for such a climate change policy and bring that back to the board.
Let me add a couple of words there, Leah. So needs and parameters.
Needs and parameters. Thank you. Okay.
Excellent. Very good. So I think we're ready for oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, Leah. Are you okay?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Carmel.
Sorry to interrupt, but I don't recall whether you took public comment on this item already.
I believe I did. Somebody else helped me. I they're all nodding. I think
yes,
I
did. You did.
Yeah. Thank you for asking, though. That's important. Yeah. I remember. We had quite a few, actually. No. Yeah. I see my notes here. Thank you. So I think we're ready for the roll call.
Okay. President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell? Aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray? Aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer? Aye. Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Stidell? Aye. And Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean? Aye.
Excellent. Motion passes 5-0. So we're ready to go. Excellent. And our kudos to the policy committee for helping us out and directing us in this. So they should feel a little good about that one. They can get that off their plate and start working on something else. So we're almost, yes, go ahead, Director Farmer.
Yeah, just a very quick comment. A little while ago, Director Stidell was talking about let's say certain policies that have already been implemented that were in this particular page on the back of 7B. I just wanted to make note that, you know, this did come from the policy committee, so to speak, and it was dated May 28th. So it's a, was it May, June? It's a month and a half old. So I just want to make the remark that while therefore some of it might appear a little dated since we've taken action on some of these items, and that's partly because this this particular statement here is, like I say, 6 weeks old, so to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. All right, folks, I think we are ready to move on. We got that one. Okay. We've got, I think we might be able to make this by four. Why don't we start and see how much discussion we have on this. This is item 7C. And this is adopting a resolution to amend the preliminary budget to include the Santa Rosa Well 4 replacement project, and of course authorizing the general manager to negotiate and execute an agreement. So, Jim Weigel, if you could present this, and then let's see how we can do here.
Thank you, President Howell. Agenda item 7C is discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 49-2022. Amending the fiscal year 2022-2023 preliminary budget to include the Santa Rosa Well 4 replacement project and authorizing the general manager to negotiate and execute an agreement. Staff recommends that the board discuss and consider adoption of this resolution to include the Santa Rosa Well 4 project and authorize the general manager to negotiate and execute the agreement for work and the repair. I have District Engineer D'Angelo standing by to outline in more detail both on the necessity for this repair and the history of what we found that made this well inoperative, and also have Administrative Department Manager Duffield standing by to talk about the impact on the budget. The bottom line is that there is a risk for us right now because we're relying on one pump at Santa Rosa Wells, which at this time of the year helped take the load off the San Simeon Wells. But I'll let District Engineer D'Angelo talk a little bit more about that and the issues regarding the repair.
Thank you, Jim Weigel. So, Mr. D'Angelo, we're all on the edge of our chairs here.
Okay, so I'll summarize what we wrote in the discussion in the in the staff report. And the bottom line is the problems in Santa Rosa 4 developed rather quickly. As a matter of fact, June 1st. And the reason what we found this out was we wanted to fire up the Santa Rosa well number 4 again, because we wanted to give the San Simeon wells a rest. And when we started the pumps up, we started noticing some water quality issues, and the water quality issues generated into pump capacity issues, dropped it to half its normal capacity. We tried different things to troubleshoot it. So again, this happened over a period of a couple of weeks. The bottom line was we decided we needed to pull the pump casing on the pump and the discharge line out to be able to see what the problem was. And the problem was there were a couple of holes. I have one of the pictures that's shown in your staff report there, where the discharge pipe is very corroded. And part of the corrosion of it actually wore out the pump impeller, and the worn out pump impeller cascaded into an electrical problem, which burned out the pump motor. So the bottom line is that Santa Rosa 4 needs to be repaired, and we're also needing to replace the discharge line. We're going to replace it with a material called Certa-Lock PVC, which is a corrosion resistant pipe. So, help bring it up to the latest technology of pipe materials. So that's the need at hand. The estimated cost is around $60,000, but we added a buffer in there because as the pump and the discharge pipe get replaced, some costs might escalate a little bit, but we wanted to cover that so that it doesn't have to go before the board again to make the request. A couple of things I do want to note as far as the concern for emergency. I'm not calling this an emergency per se, only because one of the proactive things that our staff did started to look like luck from our point of view, and luck is we make our own luck. So what I mean by that is SR3, Santa Rosa well number 3, was something that our water staff was already working on putting back online. We upgraded all of the telemetry on it, and now SR3, Santa Rosa 3, is now running in its place. And the pump capacity for SR4 is around 400 gallons per minute, but SR3 is around 350 gallons per minute. So if SR3 wasn't working, this would be an emergency. But because our water guys had the forethought to get that pump up and running, not knowing that there was going to be a problem in the future, I want to give public kudos for that.
Yes.
Because that was a very proactive thing that they did, and it turned out to be lucky on our part, which again, I don't believe in it. I don't believe in luck, so to speak. There are issues. A typical fire, would need like 1,500 gallons per minute to put out a fire. But if we look at it a little bit more objectively, it's like a typical fire doesn't last more than a couple hours, so we wouldn't be using a lot. We wouldn't be using a million gallons of water to put out a fire per se. It would be on the order of 100,000 gallons. So it is an urgent priority, but it doesn't constitute an emergency from my point of view. And we do also have San Simeon, and if there was a really big fire, then we would be calling air support to drop the red fire retardant all over us. But anyway, God forbid that should happen. So that is that's the issue beforehand. We do need to replace the pump, or you know, replace the discharge pipe and repair those pumps, and that's what the issue is before you.
Well, thank you, Mr. D'Enzo, and yes, kudos to the foresight of you and your team. I think we're seeing a lot of that. I think this is it just shows everybody we've got an excellent crew here. You know, excellent, and to deal with things that aren't even happening yet is pretty darned impressive, if you ask me. So, having said that, do we any questions for clarification before we go to the public comment? All right, seeing none. Okay, I'm going to the public now. Vice President Dean.
I was going to make a motion. Am I too soon?
You're a little ahead. No, you're not too soon at all. I jumped the gun there. Sorry. Yes, a motion could be made right now. That would be ideal, actually. Go for it.
I didn't see public comments, so I thought it was okay to make a motion.
With comment after the motion, yeah.
Okay. I move we adopt Resolution 49-2022, amending the fiscal year 2022-2023 preliminary budget to include the Santa Rosa Well 4 replacement project, and authorize the general manager to negotiate and execute an agreement.
Okay. Do we have a second? Seconded by Director Farmer. Is that yes? Okay. So it's been moved and seconded. I'm not going to read the whole thing out, but... let me see. Now, Director Farmer, it looks like you have your hand actually up. You wanted to say something?
I just want to make a quick comment, and it's more a semantic thing than anything. If one were reading this, it could appear to be that we are actually replacing. It says the Santa Rosa Well 4 replacement project. We're not really replacing the well, as it could be, you know, it could be misinterpreted that that's what's going on. We're actually repairing or restoring the well, something like that. But we're not replacing the well. Just like I say, it's just a semantic thing.
Okay, yeah, thank you. It kind of determines whether the well means the hole in the ground or whether it means the casing and, you know, and the equipment used to get the water out of the hole in the ground. So there may be multiple possibilities there. I think if we don't have further for clarification, or before we actually come to debate, let me go to the public real quick here. Folks out there, do you guys have anything you want to say about this? I'll give you about 3 seconds to make up your minds. Leah, while we wait, do we have any written comment on this item?
I have no written comment.
Thank you, Leah. Seeing no written comment and seeing no public comment, we're back to the board. Do we have any debate on this? Anything anyone would like to say about this? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. So I presume now we're all ready for the question. So it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 49-2022, amending the fiscal year 2022-23 preliminary budget to include the Santa Rosa Well 4 replacement project, and authorizing the general manager to negotiate and execute an agreement. So Leah, please call the roll, if you will.
Sure. Okay, Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Stidell, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. And President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell, aye.
Thank you. Motion passes. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. 5-0. Motion passes. Excellent. And at that, we are now ready for 8D. I see we have 5 minutes left. If you don't mind, yeah, go ahead, Director Gray.
A 15-minute extension?
Sure. I think we won't need it all, but let's go ahead and so we don't feel rushed. So it's been moved, and I assume that was a second from Vice President Dean. Was that a second? Okay. It's been moved and seconded to extend to 4:15. Do we have any objections? I'm asking for unanimous consent. There are no objections, so we will continue till 4:15. Okay, so now we're back to, these are the committee, reports. And so first of all, let me come to the board for a moment. Do any of the board members have anything they wish to say about the reports, any items they wish to emphasize or otherwise? I have one thing that I'll bring up at future agenda items, so we'll save that. Okay, I see we do have some public comment, however. So if, first of all, from the board, you guys are happy, don't wish to make any further comments about the reports. Okay. So coming to the public, we have Christine Heinrichs, Leah. So if you'd be so good as to bring her in.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like to comment on the NCAC report. The board may want to give some attention to the plight of the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse lens. This unusual Fresnel lens is a significant historic artifact, and it's a beautiful attraction. Right now, it's at risk because the structure in which it is housed is rusting away and in danger of collapsing. If it does, the lens will be irreparably damaged. Other agencies are involved in finding a permanent home for this valuable piece of Central Coast history that I ask the board to add its voice and whatever help it can to saving the lens. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. A brief question about this. Do we own the property on which that lens is now sitting? Does anybody know? It's over by the vet's hall, isn't it?
Yeah. I believe it's the county property, isn't it? It's the Lions right next to Pine Dorado.
Yeah.
I think that might be county. Somebody else.
Yeah, for some reason it was, otherwise this would have already been in our laps, number one. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be at the NCAC, number two.
Yeah, I think it's the county property.
I'm pretty sure it's the county. Yeah.
Okay, just kind of curious what our responsibility might be. Okay, thank you for that. So I think we're now ready for future agenda items. Now I have three items on here. But first of all, you guys first. Anybody have anything they would like to suggest? Yes, no. Director Farmer and then Director Gray.
Yes, I would like to request that probably can't happen at the next board meeting a week from today, but perhaps the first board meeting in August, that we revisit and reevaluate the district water shortage contingency plan status, and maybe move it up to level 3. So that is my suggestion.
Okay, thank you, Director Farmer. Okay, Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, President Howell. I got a couple of very brief ones. one is the pick up on something that was mentioned during our strategic plan about the ad hoc committee. I got appointed, Harry, it was Dr. Farmer and myself, following the report from the subcommittee of the finance committee on structural change in operations and so forth. There was some confusion about the mandate for that or the scope for that ad hoc committee's work. I take it to mean that we should look into not just the things that were specific to that structure report, but also the other report that they did, that subcommittee or the preceding subcommittee did on possible, different funding mechanisms. And the thing that I'm interested in, maybe we can narrow it a bit, is public-private partnerships, because these could be, the Vets Hall is an obvious choice for this. And this was mentioned by the subcommittee. There may be a couple others for management of land, not the ranch, but other land. But I wanted to allow us to investigate and talk to, basically this is going out in the community and talking to people, because it's not about staff being brought in except maybe to get cost estimates as to how much we can save, but to get some interest going in perhaps having a nonprofit set up or community council, doing something like that. So I want to make it focused on, we're going to draft an agenda item for that, focused on private partnerships generally. Other couple other items. One, pick up on Director Stidell's suggestion earlier on about revisiting the policy ad hoc committee report, and particularly the grid. I would propose an item where we bring that back for update of that grid and then adopt it. Maybe a two-step process, but at least do the update first and the adoption. And finally, Ms. Dickinson mentioned the San Simeon liaison position, which I do believe you, President Howell, aren't you officially the liaison to San Simeon, or I think we've kind of forgotten about it, but it is interesting to me that maybe we should have somebody there. You might want to, you want to continue on it, and or yeah. Somebody else might be appointed.
I'll have to check on that. I'm sorry for jumping in there. I remember looking at that, and I think it was, it may have been Director Steidel, I think. Oh, okay, we're in agreement. I'm not imagining that. So I guess what you're suggesting is maybe it's time to start paying closer.
Well, I mean, if a position's already been filled, well, we can discuss what that liaison should do. But there is this, new opportunity for joint efforts with them that's come up out of both out of the Coastal Commission and out of the Water Resources Control Board. So they're both, promoting this idea of joint efforts.
Okay. I made a note here, and I think Director Steidel, maybe you and I should get together, because I've been approached by some of the directors up there as well. And maybe we should talk a little bit and kind of decide.
Oh, okay.
That's
fine. I have to admit I've been watching the meetings, but there was a period of time where they had things that were very specific to San Simeon.
Right.
And carried, some legal baggage with it. And I just didn't feel that it was appropriate to be turning around and reporting that to another CCSD.
Yeah. I figured it was, the reason we hadn't heard anything, because there wasn't anything really to say. But now that things have, because San Simeon's getting pressured by the Coastal Commission now, so.
Right. And then some of this goes back to what Bruce Gibson had been trying to do several years ago, and actually had approached the district a few years back, and we said, we're not interested.
Yeah. So we had an ad hoc committee, I think, didn't we, at one point?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't remember that, but
yeah, something like that. Anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, great. Tom, so that's good, Director Gray. So anybody else, future agenda? Okay, I've got a few more, but before I forget, and I just want to remind the public, and I just checked this out myself, and it's a little hard to find, but on our website, there is a way for the public to request an agenda item. I think it's probably used mostly for appealing some decision that the management might have made, where the board has to act in a judicial capacity. But it actually could be any agenda item. I just wanted to mention that is out there, and it is a way that the public can communicate concerns to us if they feel it rises to that level. My only comment there to Jim Weigold, it's a little hard to find that. I stumbled onto it myself, so might want to take a look at that and possibly even create a quick link for it, just because as we do try to invite public participation. Doesn't mean we have to, just because somebody requests an item doesn't mean that we have to do it, but at least we need to have the request so we can acknowledge it. Yeah, Director Gray,
I just wanted to apologize for Director Steidel for overlooking her.
Oh.
Her position as liaison.
not a problem.
Okay, I have a couple more. Let me see here. And actually, Director Gray, you already did talk about the grid. Mm-hmm. However, I saw in the report, let me see if I can find it. Here it is right here. Nope, that's not it. You had suggested in the discussion, here it is. Here it is. This is in the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. And the report says that you suggested that FFRP send a letter to the CCSD board suggesting something be done on the ranch. The leash ordinance. Would you like us to take that up independently, or do we just wait for them to come?
That's an interesting question. I think they have to kind of make the request.
Okay.
Because of their role in their direct role in overseeing the ranch. So I for now, let's wait to see what they do.
Okay, I just wanted to acknowledge that. I saw that concern, and I thought we needed to get that out there. There may be other things, and I have a question to council on this, and then I think we're all ready to close up. In trying to keep track of all these, these future agenda items and this kind of thing, I was contemplating just going through my list, which is actually a couple pages long now, of things that have been brought out over the last half year or so. Would it be a Brown Act violation if I sent that list of future agenda items to the directors just to ask if there was anything they wished to add or take off of that list? I mean, that was their, anything they wanted to add to the list, let's put it that way. I just wanted to be sure that I have everything covered, that everything that anybody's brought up. So am I safe in doing that as long as they only reply to me saying, okay. So, yeah.
As long as you're not sharing the information with another director.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, this would just be helping. Yeah, go ahead, Director Steidel.
And you might ask also if there's any specific priority. They don't have to prioritize everything, but if there is a priority to any individual item, that would probably be worthwhile for feedback also.
I love that. So that'd be okay if they were to prioritize them and get them back to me, Mr. Carmel? And then I could go from there just to select the most highest priority or something. And it's sort of like we're just skating the edge of the Brown Act there somehow.
Well, again, you have to keep it between you and one other director and not share the information.
Got it. Okay. But so it would be just for me privately as we're trying to work through future agendas. I just want to be sure that nothing gets forgotten. And you've all brought up some really good things. So I think that I would like to be sure that we at least – it doesn't get just filed away in some papers. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll get that together. You can look for that. And in the meanwhile, if you have any other thoughts, you might feel free to just, I guess you could drop me an email if there's something else that suddenly crosses your mind that you think we really ought to discuss. Does anyone else have any parting comments for anybody as we're about ready to close up here? Okay, I don't see anything. Next week will be a fairly interesting meeting. So we can all look forward to it. So thank you all for your time and attention here. As always, I love seeing you all. This is my major social activity of the week. So we could pretend we're all having a drink. So thank you all. Thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you next week. And of course, as I said, please communicate with me if you have any concerns at all. You can email me or text me or call me if you like. So thank you very much for your participation. And I look forward to it. Everybody stay healthy.
Good evening.
Everybody have a blessed weekend.
Okay. Without objection, we stand adjourned.